Nick Patrick can always eat a dick as far as I'm concerned, though.
I mean, I don't know. I never really noticed the guy, honestly.
Yeah, I grew up I grew up in the late 90s. Like, that's when I first started getting into wrestling.
Right, yeah.
So I had the benefit of both WCW and WWF at the time. And so WCW fucking was really big on that time. Like, they would feature, like, crooked ref storylines and shit. And Nick Patrick was always the crooked ref.
Really?
Yeah. Like, at one point, he literally was billed as Nick Patrick, the NWO's personal referee.
Well, wait, why was he still allowed to, like, ref matches then?
Because WCW. Like, I'm pretty sure that happened after they made the revelation that Eric Bischoff, who was on-screen president, was also a member of the NWO.
Okay.
So, like, they could basically do whatever they want, but it was really weird. Like, it was really weird, though, because, like, WCW NWO were constantly having matches for, like, power. Like, they had a match one time, it was, like, Bischoff versus Zbyszko.
Right.
With Bret Hart as the special guest referee.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Starcade, right?
Yeah, and, like, the stipulation was that if fucking Bischoff won, then the NWO got to have Nitro. Like, what kind of dumbass deal is that on WCW's part?
I mean, like, you're gonna bet the whole thing on one match, like...
Right? Like, no, we'll give you our centerpiece show.
Like, all you had to do was win one match. Like, well, shit, okay.
Yeah, it's a non-wrestler against a retired wrestler.
Yeah.
For control of the highest-rated wrestling program on television.
Well, like, when Brick came in, were they teasing like that he was NWO then?
Yeah, they were, actually.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking, okay.
Yeah, like, the whole tease with Bret Hart coming in was basically, but whose side is he on?
Yeah, okay.
And, there never really was a clear resolution to that for a long while. Like, he would do stuff that benefited WCW, like, one week, and then he'd come out the next week and do something to, like, benefit fucking NWO.
Really?
And then, like, he randomly... Yeah, dude, and then there was a point in mid to late 98 where he just, like, randomly started teaming with Hulk Hogan. Like, if he...
As, like, faces or heels?
As heels. Like, if you go back and watch... Like, if you go back to, Fall Brawl 98, fucking, the NWO black and white team was Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart, and Stevie Ray.
Really? Well, why the fuck is Stevie Ray, though?
Because Stevie Ray. Like, dude, yeah, that was the weirdest one of all time, though, because it was like, there was Team Hollywood. And then there was Team Wolfpack, and that was, I think, Nash, Sting, and somebody else. I think that's who that team was. And then there was Team WCW, which was Rowdy Roddy Piper, Diamond Dallas Page, and the Ultimate Warrior.
What an odd pairing.
Right? And Ultimate Warrior, like, was only in that match to, like, fucking fuck with Hulk Hogan.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, once he finished fucking with Hulk Hogan, I'm pretty sure DDP pinned Stevie Ray. Like, there's your answer as to why Stevie Ray was in the match.
So you can take the fall, of course, because I'll be Hogan. So, of course.
Right. He was the only guy in the NWO that, at that point, that didn't have creative control, so he was like,
of course. Like, Stevie, get your ass in there.
Yeah, Stevie, you're going to be in the main event. Yay! You're going to take the fall. Fuck!
Don't get in too much offense, either.
Yeah, you leave that slapjack gimmick back here, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see you bust out that dirty sock tonight. Tonight ain't your night, kid.
Well, here comes the pain!
I am the greatest WWE champion of all time. I'm the whole... God! And I am the wrestling god! Who among you has that one single ingredient who has enough ruthless aggression?
Good evening, Hawkamaniacs. Holy shit. I'm still alive. Unfortunately, Asher is not. Well, that might be too strongly worded. Asher's not dead, but unfortunately, he's not gonna be on the show anymore. Like, not regularly. Like, that's not to say, like, oh, fucking Asher's gone and he's never coming back. But with his schedule and my schedule and everything else involved in the show, he decided to step back and let somebody else fill his seat regularly. He'll still be joining us for three-man shows in the future, and we do have an Asher's Exit Extravaganza featuring a cavalcade of celebrity guests, and that'll be coming in the future weeks. But now we've got somebody new, so so say goodbye to your old daddy and meet your new daddy, kids, because now we have someone that's not Asher, and I'm going to go ahead and let you introduce yourself to the listening audience here, because that's how we do things.
Well, alrighty then. Well, hi, kids. I'm Magic. I've been a wrestling fan for about 12 years now. I've known Hawk for a while, and when he told me that Asher didn't want to do the show, I figured I'd come in and, you know, kind of fill in the spot for him.
It keeps the dynamic intact, goddammit.
Yeah. I'm the young pup with the grizzled vet.
Exactly. I've seen things, kid.
Yeah.
I've seen Triple H fuck a mannequin's brains out.
Oh, God.
That sets the tone for the show. Like, really, like, you can tell how an episode's going to go based on how long it takes me to make a reference to necrophilia or some other perversion.
Oh, well, okay.
And there we go. So welcome to the show.
Well, I'm happy to be
it's
here.
It's good to have you. Yeah, as you mentioned, we've known each other for quite a while, so
yeah, thanks to the lovely forum over at Fan, you know,
which we're now featured on.
Yeah, we are. Exactly. I heard about that. Yes.
Yeah, the Ruthless Aggression Podcast Volume 2, as we're calling it. That's the Asher free version. Sadly, we're gonna, in addition to our partnership with Botchamania, we're gonna be joining the freaking awesome network with this episode that you're listening to currently.
Yep. So that should be great.
So if you didn't find us there, you should go check that website out, because Magic does a lot of writing there too, you guys.
I do. I review old WWF pay-per-views, 1999. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, next one up is King of the Ring, which should be done sometime this month.
And they are spectacular. And not to mention Raw reviews, and soon I'm going to be writing an NFL column for the website, hopefully.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's going to be me and another guy. We're going to do our text version of some sports show. I don't know. I don't watch enough actual sports programming to know what we'd be ripping off.
Oh, I'm not a sports guy at all. I barely watch sports.
Yeah, Yeah, like, I get all of my sports news from either my ESPN app on my phone or Deadspin.
Right, okay.
So, yeah. But, so look for both of us there, then. And now that we've got our early shilling out of the way, what are we here to talk about?
We're here to talk about Survivor Series 2002.
Survivor Series 2002, which, honestly, guys, I'm going to tell you right from the get here, probably the best fucking show that this podcast has seen yet.
This was a great wrestling show, guys.
Yeah, we're gonna get into it more in depth as we go here. But holy shit, if you're listening to this show and you haven't seen Survivor Series 2002, just like stop right here, like take note of what the timestamp is. Go to either your DVD shelf or your WWE network or your sketchy Indian hookup, and put some eyes on Survivor Series 2002, and then come back to this.
Yes.
Because you're really going to have to see it to appreciate what we're going to say about it.
Yes, this is one of the shows where there really was not a bad match in the show.
There was not a bad match. There wasn't even the worst segment was still had some sort of merit.
Yes, it was still entertaining. Yeah.
Like, even the Big Show threatening to eat Eric Bischoff was, like, top-notch, like, head and shoulders above most of what was on Impact this week.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Actually,
Impact was all right this week, but Impact most weeks, yeah.
Yeah, Impact most weeks. Like, how hilarious is it that TNA is potentially canceled and now putting on good shows?
All right. Like, you guys are waiting this long? Like, I mean,
exactly.
It's Go ahead.
Well, no, it's like, if TNA had, if they had bothered to put on these shows like 6 months ago, maybe they wouldn't have reached this point in negotiations with Spike.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, they waited too long and now they're dead, you know? Fucked around for too
hashtag,
long.
Hashtag, it happens.
That is...
Started...
I'm going to watch that. That is going to be fucking tremendous.
Oh, I can't wait. I hope that, Spike TV does some sort of insane, like, censorship job on it, though.
Dude, I'm so hoping that it's going to be like the scene. They're going to put Dixie up, and then right before she goes to the table, black screen.
Yes. And you won't even get the audio of what's happening.
Yeah. And even better, how about they have some kind of message that says, like, go to, like, ImpactWrestling.com or something like that.
Yes, go to ImpactWrestling.com to see the full footage of what happened.
Yes.
And then it gets, like... 36 hits. I remember that happened once. Like, TNA did something. Like, that they were promoting. It was either, like, I don't think they were promoting it on Impact. But they were promoting some sort of footage online. It's like, oh, this is, you know, exclusive, blah, 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 blah. And it was supposed to further an angle.
Right.
And it only got, like, 2,000 hits or something like that in a week.
Of course, it's TNA.
Of course. TNA should, like, I want to say never change. But at the same time, like, if I want to, like, see this kind of craziness from them in the future, they kind of have to change for a little while.
Yeah, so they can stay alive, yeah.
But they're not gonna.
No, they're done. They have not learned a goddamn thing in 12 years. They're done.
Not one thing. I cannot wait to see fucking TNA resurrected in zombie form next year with, Global Force Wrestling.
Oh, man. I mean, I wonder what they're going to get for that. I mean, who's even out there? Who could they pick up?
Honestly, like, I really think they're hinging a lot of their bets on fucking TNA going out of business.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Like, I think Jeff Jarrett's really just, like, sitting back and, like, trying to make as many non-talent-related business deals as he can
right.
until the day he gets that faithful phone call from the Carters where they're just like, look, Jeff, we're going out of business over here. And if you got, like, $500-$600, you can have all of these contracts. Like, you can have everybody from fucking Borash to Abyss to Robbie Z, all of them. You want Crazy Steve, you can have him. His contract's $650. Like, just take them off our hands, please.
Oh, yeah, like, we don't want him anymore. God, we can't take him anymore.
Right? Like, seriously, do not be surprised if GFW fucking debuts with a six-sided ring.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Because they got it on the cheap.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sure it will.
Like, you can have all of these contracts plus the ring for a grand. We'll even throw in the popcorn machine. Stole that from Brian Kendrick.
Oh, yeah, from the Price is Right.
Yeah, he won it on the Price is Right, and yeah. TNA... stole it to make revenue, I believe.
Yeah, did they even miss it on TV?
No, they did not. Yeah, like, Brian Kendrick went and appeared on The Price is Right completely independent of TNA while under contract with them.
Yeah, of course they didn't mention it, of course.
Right, and he didn't mention TNA either.
Yeah.
That's the funniest
thing. That's the big thing. Like, that right there tells you everything you need to know about TNA. Like,
right, like... Right, like Drew Carey wasn't like, oh, Brian, what's your job? And he's like, oh, I'm a professional wrestler for Total Nonstop Action, Thursday night on Spike.
Oh, my God, that reminds me of, like, Eric Young did, like, an AMA on Reddit. And, like, in, like, the description, he listed himself as, like, a wrestling world champion. No mention of TNA.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I'm a world champion for a professional wrestling company. Which one? You shut the fuck up.
Yeah, all the companies.
I am a world champion. You don't need to worry about where it's from. Here's my belt. What's that logo say? Shut up! Imagine Eric Young, like, just, when he wasn't actually with TNA, like, he just put black tape over the TNA logo on his belt. Like, it just says world champion.
Yeah, like, no, I'm the WCW world champion. Still around.
Yeah, WCW's still around. You didn't know that?
Yeah.
Check us out, Thursday nights on Spike. People tune in. Wow, this really is WCW. I know a lot of people over the years, myself included, have kind of gotten sick of that whole TNA is WCW 2.0 comparison. But the last week and a half or so has really proved that TNA is WCW 2.0,
yeah.
You guys.
Yeah.
Like, right down to letting Vince Russo hang around until the fucking rot was on the floor.
Exactly, yeah. Just keep bringing him back. That's all you know how to do.
Right, and Spike's like, we don't want fucking Vince Russo working for you. Don't worry, guys, he's not. And then Vince Russo's like, I'm working for him. And then they're like, God, fucking Spike's like, God damn it, TNA. And they're like, don't worry, we fired him. Vince Russo's probably at home. Those dumb bastards, we worked them. I swear to God, I'm not working for TNA. Honestly, wink, wink.
I mean, honestly, I would not be surprised when this came out that he was still working for them.
Oh my God, I would not be surprised when news came out that, like, at no point did he ever stop.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if even, like, during the fucking Hogan-Bischoff era, like, Russo was still sitting at home collecting a paycheck just waiting on them to leave so that he could resume his duties.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Like, Dixie was calling him up every week, don't worry, Vince, just a couple more weeks and their contract is over.
Yeah, just a couple more weeks, sweetie, and we'll be together again.
Exactly. Don't worry, my love. We'll be reunited soon.
I mean, not for rumors, but thumbs up. Either Vince and Dixie are fucking, or something's up. Thumbs up.
I think that Serge is just, like, a huge fan of the Attitude Era. And he just keeps demanding, like, Dixie. Like, he is the one guy on YouTube that's still like, PG sucks, bring back Attitude,
right.
Thumbs up if you agree.
But he just has a bunch of alternate accounts. It's all just him.
Exactly, he's that guy online. And every time, like, Vince Russo goes away, he's like, but Dixie, I want to do Attitude Era. She, like, has to bring him back so that he can try to book a new Attitude Era. And then it doesn't work.
Of course not.
Because that period is dead, guys,
yeah.
And we need to let that go.
And move on.
Says the guy that hosts the show based on 12 years ago wrestling.
Well, still, Attitude Era is dead.
Yeah, still. We're not clamoring for this to come back.
Yeah, I mean,
although this show...
Oh yeah, fuck you. Yeah, more of this show would be great.
Yeah, if they booked more stuff like this show, I'd be pretty stoked. Like, we got a Big Show versus Brock Lesnar match that didn't suck.
Oh, yeah. That was better than had any right to.
Definitely. Actually, the highlight video that they showed to start off with was mostly Big Show versus Lesnar talk with the preceding week seeing Big Show just beating the shit out of Lesnar basically at every turn.
Yeah.
Lesnar had busted ribs thanks to Hell in a Cell as well as the Big Show attacking him. And Paul Heyman was starting to doubt that Lesnar could beat him, which is kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Because, like, they didn't show it in the intro video, but when we get to the highlight video for the actual match itself, like, you see that Lesnar just went straight up fucking murder on on Big Show, like, a couple days before.
Yeah, I was about to say, was that the go-home show?
I believe so, yeah. Like, Lesnar murdered the Big Show on the go-home show.
Yeah, on this very show, Heyman's still talking about, I don't think you can beat him, Brock.
Yeah, like, I don't think you can beat him. It's like, he did a pretty convincing job on Thursday night.
He murdered this man just a couple of days ago. I think he'll be all right, Heyman.
Right, like, if you ask me, fucking the smart money's on Lesnar in
this
one.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't bet against Brock.
Not at this time point,
yeah.
Period. As we call him on this show, the Minnesota murder machine was in full effect.
Oh, yeah, he was killing bitches dead.
He was killing everything. Not quite announcers yet, though.
No.
Although, we're going to get to see just some incredible Brock Lesnar murder as a face. Like, that's my favorite thing. Like, Brock Lesnar's just going to be a murder machine face for, like, 6 months.
Oh, but see, the thing, I don't remember a whole lot about, like, Lesnar's, like, face run at this time. So I'm going to be, like, watching his back.
Yeah, like, he basically just killed people. Like, that, he was the same character, they just cheered him.
Really? Okay. So, well, that makes sense.
It's amazing. I can't wait for it. Well, I want to see if it's still as good as I remember it being. But, something that's not as awesome as I remember it being is Eric Bischoff promos. And there was one in this video where he just, like, spent 20 or 30 fucking hours talking about Evolution and how he's the catalyst of change for WWE because he introduced the Elimination Chamber, which is going to debut on this show.
Yes.
And it's funny that Bischoff spends all this time talking about Evolution in the intro when we'll actually see Evolution start to form here in the next couple months.
Look, it should be, well, not good, but I'm looking for
yeah.
good.
It'll be somewhat enjoyable.
There are, there are bright spots in there. I mean,
the thing I have to wonder about here, like, did they already have the name Evolution and everything decided? And, like, they knew that's where they were going in just, like, a month or two?
I mean, I feel like they did. Because, like, didn't they shoot, like, some videos that had, like, Mark Jindrak in, like, Batista place?
They did, yeah. And that would have been around this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, I find it hard to imagine, even with all the stories we hear, that, like, Triple H was backstage and he heard this. He's like, Evolution, I'm going to steal that. And then, like... I just decided he was going to have a stable named Evolution, went and bullied the writers into it.
Well, like, give me that Orton guy that's been injured for 6 months.
Like, give me Mark Jindrak. No way, he sucks. Give me Batista.
Yeah, Mark Jindrak, no. Batista, yes. I need a guy with a belly button tattoo in this group. Evolution.
But,
I thought Ric Flair hanging around.
Yeah, we need Flair. Why do we need Flair?
No.
He's got to do something.
Yeah, he needs to be there all the time, with me, everywhere.
I just want to hang out with Ric Flair. Respect that.
That's why Evolution happened, so that Triple H could hang out with Ric Flair all the time.
Oh, of course. Yeah, sure. He was so desperate to be like Triple H, be like Ric Flair, he had to hang around him.
Exactly. He was really just trying to get close to Ric Flair's tailor.
Oh.
He's like, those are some fine cut suits the Nature Boy wears. Got to get in on that action.
Like, well, I want to be limousine riding.
I want to both be limousine riding and jet flying.
And maybe even steal a few kisses.
While wheeling and dealing.
Yeah.
Man, Ric Flair had such an odd combination of nicknames going for him.
It's hard to keep track of, dude.
It really is. Like, there's Nature Boy, there's Divorce Court Plaintiff Number 4. There's just so many, so many.
Yeah.
Man, with the shit that I say on this show, you would never know I was a Ric Flair fan.
I mean, yeah, I like Rick too. I mean, I haven't seen too much of, like, his old, like, A's work, but I like Rick, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I've always been a big Ric Flair fan, but did you ever see the episode of Wife Swap that he was on?
I don't think I did, no.
Oh, man, that might be a fun bonus episode to do at some point down the road. But they did an episode of Wife Swap, and I'm sure you're familiar with the concept. For those of you listening that aren't, that are probably international listeners, I'm sure, we have a show here where people sign up to send their wife away to another family for 2 weeks while that wife, the wife from the other family comes to stay with them for 2 weeks. And because that concept's not bizarre enough as it is, we also have a celebrity version. And on the celebrity version, they did an episode where Ric Flair and Roddy Piper switched. And it was actually Fifi the maid from WCW that went to live with Roddy Piper for 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Roddy Piper's wife, who Ric Flair was actually Piper's best man in the wedding to his wife, because Piper's been married to the same woman forever.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, like, she went to stay with Flair, so they've known each other forever. And, like, I want to say it was a year, maybe less, after Reed died.
Oh.
And, like, it's basically just, like, an hour of watching, like, Ric Flair self-destruct on camera. It's really sad. Like, it's just, like, fucking Piper's wife says to him, like, oh, maybe you need to, you know, not spend as much. He's just like, I'm the Nature Boy. It's what people expect from me. Woo! You know, it's like, that's the whole thing, the whole episode.
So it's basically just Rick just being Rick and just looking at how depressing he is, basically.
Exactly, like, it's a sad, like, if the Nature Boy in kayfabe went broke, that's what this would be. And it's, like, it's really great, too, because Fifi's got, like, 4 kids that are under the age of 18, and they all live there in the house with Rick, and there's this beautiful moment where, like, right when he gets home and sees who he's, like, wife-swapped with, and he's introducing her to the family, you can totally see him forget the names of, like, half the kids. Like, he has to take a second to remember. It's like, the fuck is this one's name again? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, my goddamn kids, I don't care.
I'm sure that happens to Rick a lot in his everyday life.
Right, it's like, that one's David. That one, no, wait, no, those are my actual children. The ones that didn't bankrupt me taking care of them. I don't know if that's actually true. I feel bad for Ric Flair at this point, honestly.
I mean, yes, bad to watch what happens to him, man.
Dude, I cannot wait for fucking Legends House Round 2 when they inevitably announce Ric Flair for the cast.
Oh, yeah, you know he's going to be on there eventually.
Oh, yeah, not only that, Ric Flair will be on there, and Ric Flair is going to be the one that either gets in trouble for or everybody laughs at for, like, whipping his cock out at somewhere completely inappropriate.
Oh, yeah, like, that's our Rick.
Right? Like, they're going to go to the grocery store. And it's going to be like, where's Rick? And, like, they're going to go around the corner, and he's going to be in the frozen food section, like, holding a bag of pizza rolls in one hand and a pineapple in the other. Just fucking pants around his ankles. Like, oh, Rick, never change. But seriously, put that away.
Dude, no, you're addressing us, Rick. Stop.
Right, I don't want to see you have a 5-star match with that pineapple because I'm pretty certain you're just going to fuck it.
Yeah.
Yep, and don't eat those pizza rolls. They are still frozen. God, Ric Flair just went from, like, depressed and bankrupt to just full-on demented.
Yeah.
In under 2 minutes.
He just lost his mind completely.
And speaking of fucking demented, this was at the time when WWE kind of lost their shit and thought everyone wanted to hear a new metal theme song for every fucking pay-per-view.
Dude, I'm not gonna lie, I kind of marked up when I heard the theme for this.
I was pretty happy that the licensed music was still intact. Like, I'm always really pleased when that's the case on network content.
Yeah, because sometimes it's kind of a crapshoot. You don't know what you're gonna get.
Right, looking at you, Saturday Night's Main Event. I want my goddamn Animotion, motherfuckers. Anyway, but no, I'm not big on this whole, like, wave of music, like Saliva and Puddle of Mud and POD and all those bands. Like, they never really were my thing.
I mean, for me, they actually were my thing at the time, but now I look back and I'm like, what the fuck was I looking to do?
What was wrong with me? My dad was really into these kind of bands.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, I kind of played along with that when need be. Yeah. But, no, they were never really my thing. Like, I think the one song I could consider that I really liked at any point from any of those bands was She Fucking Hates Me by Puddle of Mud. But just really because of the novelty of it all.
Don't think I've ever heard that one.
Oh, man, that song is hilarious. Like, it really is just, like, the calmest song about having an insane girlfriend.
Really? Okay.
Which, any of you guys out there who date crazy girls, and I know I'm not the only one, relate to that song. Yeah. CM Hawk, I dig crazy chicks.
Best in the world.
Put that on a t-shirt. Best in the world at picking insane girlfriends. We'll get to this wonderful pay-per-view, which featured one of the fucking weirdest stage setups I've ever seen. Simply because they had a stage in the middle of the crowd for Pyro.
Yes, that was weird.
Like, oh, hey, we've got our usual Madison Square Garden stage set up with, you know, the tunnel and the small video screen, but also here's a stage in the middle of the crowd that we're going to launch explosives at.
Yeah.
Duck and cover, NYC. You're about to get fucking pyroed.
Dude, I kept expecting, like, the pyro just go off in the crowd.
Right? Like, it seems like every time WWE puts pyro that close to the crowd, something goes wrong.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I'm honestly astounded that it didn't in this instance.
Oh, yeah, at one point, well, spoiler alert, everyone. At one point, Ray popped out of like, that section. I'm surprised, like, he didn't catch a fire or anything like that.
Right, like, at that point, I became convinced that that was literally the only reason that stage was there.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, we've got Rey Mysterio on the card, and, his entrance has gotta be cool.
Yeah, it's Rey Mysterio, guys, so,
So, but put a fucking stage out there. Well, what are we going to do? Just have the stage there? Well, fuck it. We'll put another little one there, and we'll make the Raw commentary team sit out there, and we'll shoot explosives at them. Isn't that dangerous? It's JR. Do we really care?
Who gives a shit, guys? Come on.
God damn it, it's Jim Ross. I don't give a fuck.
Like, 8 months, they're going to legitimately set JR on fire. So,
yeah,
we probably aren't too far off here.
And that will be glorious.
Oh, I can't wait until we really get into the Jim Ross torture, because it shows you just how much of a company guy he was.
Yeah. I have no idea how he's not so doing to go fuck himself.
Right? Like, if I were Jim Ross, I would have just fucking cut ties with that company years ago.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Written the most fucking scathing tell-all.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not...
I bet that dude's got stories.
Oh, for sure. Sure. Like, I'm not advocating going to TNA, but if there was ever a reason to go to TNA, it'd be that.
It would be, yeah, like, they shoved his fucking face in Vince's ass.
Yeah.
Soon we're gonna see him, like, break a cinder block on his head. He's gonna get set on fire, beat up by Linda.
Yeah, like, doesn't Linda, like, kick him in the balls at one point?
Linda kicks him right square in the nuts on an episode of Raw. Yeah. It's just like, there's going to be so much JR abuse coming up, and you're just going to wonder, like, how do you take this, JR? How? Who hurt you when you were young that made you think this abuse is okay?
Yeah, I have no idea how I say
it. JR, he's just a loyal guy, I guess. He's just so fucking still bitter and angry at the way things went with WCW. He's like, God damn it, I'll stay with Vince McMahon till the day I die.
Like, no matter what happened to him, because of WCW, he has to stay with them.
Right? Like, Vince saved me from a horrible situation. I'll just stay here forever. Alright, Jim, we're gonna get you kicked in the nuts tonight, and that's gonna write you off TV for about 6 weeks. So that you can have surgery, and then we're still not going to bring you back. Why not? Because you have an old, saggy face, and that's not good for television. Okay, I guess I guess that's all right with me, boss. Like, that's the JR mind frame, it sounds like.
Like, well, fuck, at least it's not WCW.
Yeah, well, fuck it, I guess I'm not working for Jim Herd anymore. Like, Bill Watts was a real son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I'd rather work here than for that shit.
I think we've, done enough preambling there about Jim Ross's possible career motives.
And I think now we can safely get into the first match of this pay-per-view, because this show had a blistering pace. Like, there was absolutely no downtime.
Yeah. This is a super fast-paced show.
It was, definitely. The first match of the night, we get the Dudleys, who are, at this point, Bubba Ray and Spike, and Jeff Hardy against 3-Minute Warning and Rico. Who, as we know at this point, had broken up with Billy and Chuck, and they were now fucked right on off.
Okay, so did, like, Rico hook up with 3-Minute Warning after you left Billy and Chuck?
Rico, he was the mole that allowed Eric Bischoff and 3-Minute Warning to sabotage the Billy and Chuck wedding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he joined up with them right around, like, Unforgiven. Yeah, he was basically the whole catalyst for Billy and Chuck turning face for like a minute before they disappeared.
Wow, I have no memory of any of that.
Yeah, I didn't either until I started doing this show. And then I wish I'd forgotten it, because it was really tasteless all around.
Yeah, that's a pretty shitty thing to do with WWE.
But man, did I love Billy and Chuck.
They were a good...
That tag team was hilarious.
Yeah, they were a fun team.
They were, and then when they turned face, like, they were such an awesome face team. Like, what a missed opportunity, you guys. Write to WWE 12 years ago and tell them you want face Billy and Chuck in your tag team division.
Hell, bring them back now.
Fuck it, yeah. Yeah. I'm sure Chuck Palumbo's still in ring shape.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, he can't be doing anything of note, so bring him back.
Right, I'm sure Dolph Ziggler would be stoked to get to travel with his dad again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Road Dogg can fuck off for a little bit and just let Chuck take his place.
Exactly. I think we're all wanting a Billy and Chuck reunion over the New Age Outlaws.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, that's tired, guys. Give us the themes and the headband and we'll be happy. Yeah. Anyway, Yeah, this was odd combinations all around, though, because, you know, you had Rico working his fucking whatever you want to call his gimmick at this point, and then, like, 3-minute warning or, like, the Samoan ghetto, like, crushers, I guess, and then, like, you've got the redneck Dudleys, and then Jeff Hardy, who is just really fucking high.
Yeah, I noticed Jeff Hardy's wearing mascara on this match.
Yes, not only that, like, did you notice when he came out with the glow paint?
Yes,
like,
I did.
it was just, like, white entirely all over the lower half of his face.
Yeah.
I thought he was, like, auditioning to fucking replace Tony Montana in the Scarface reboot.
Yeah, Jeff Hardy's weird, guys. He's really weird.
Really weird and really covered in coke.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lawler was wearing his favorite swap meet rug coat when we saw him. Like, for $2.95, you can get this coat as well. I think we all know what coat I'm talking about here.
Do we?
The blue royal I'm a king but not really coat. You know, the snazzy blue number that looks like a carpet you see hanging up at a museum.
Okay, I know what you're talking about
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's favorite look from the king. Early on in this match, we got just like I really, like, I'm gonna go back to this word a lot because it's really the only way to describe this match. Like, don't get me wrong, it was really fun.
Yeah.
But this match was really fucking weird.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, literally one of the first moves of offense that the face team pulls off is Bubba picks up Spike and throws him at 3-minute warning who's on the outside.
Yeah.
And then they catch him, and then Jeff does, like, almost a poetry in motion to the outside off of Bubba to take out all four of them. All
right, now this I didn't like, just because the Samoans had to, like, stand there with Spike, looking at Jeff running at them.
Right? Like, it's like, oh, we caught the little guy.
Yeah. Like, oh, wait a minute, what's Jeff doing?
Yeah, right, like they could see him coming.
Yes.
Just like,
it looked like such goobers just standing there.
They should have thrown Spike at him.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been the smart thing. Just throw Spike right at Jeff, knock him out of the air.
Like, you're two...
Easy pickings.
Exactly. Like, you're two huge Samoans carrying a tiny man. Figure something out to do with it.
Right? Like, or just, like, or drop Spike and catch Jeff.
Yeah.
And then each of you can pick up one of the little guys and then destroy them.
Exactly.
You have so many options.
But nope. Gotta stand there. Spot.
Right? And then we got Rico wearing gear that I'm pretty sure inspired what Fandango wears on a weekly basis. It was a lovely blue snakeskin number this evening. We did get something fucking fantastic early on, though, that really just, like, it made no goddamn sense just in terms of what happened. But Spike hit a Hurricane Rana on Jamal.
Yeah.
And it was fucking awesome.
It was awesome.
Like, this big Samoan just flipped through the air for this 142-pound man.
Oh, yeah, 3-minute warning, they moved great for their size. They moved great.
Definitely, like, it was a lot of fun watching them work at this size, and then you realize, like, Jamal was so much smaller when he was Umaga later on.
Yeah.
And he's still just, like, his set speed, if anything, it fucking increased.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, such a fucking killer later on, and you can definitely see the seeds of that here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because holy shit did these guys impress me. But we did get a bastardized what-up spot from both Spike and Jeff. And Jeff just, like, Jeff full-on fucking double leg drops Rico in the dick.
Yeah.
Which is a really asshole thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, like, I don't care if he's a face, Jeff. You don't have to crush his nuts like that. Don't, like, you could have split his taint wide open with a brutal move like that. Did you not consider that sort of thing? Sean Waltman was out of action for ages because of a similar injury.
Yes, it's a very real thing, folks. Look it up.
Look it up. It's something we need to raise awareness about.
Yeah.
Rosie just wasn't dealing with shit early in this match,
dude,
though.
No. He just went, like, just goon mode. Like, he just started no-selling just everything. Just, like...
Rosie was not to be fucked with in this match.
Yeah.
Like, at one point, he made Jeff slam himself.
Yeah.
Like, Jeff jumps at him with a crossbody, and Rosie attempted to catch him, and I can only assume that, like, the weird mixture of, like, paint and sweat and fucking glitter and drugs that coated Jeff's body at this point, like, caused him to slip. But Rosie played it off so cool, like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I didn't drop him. I slammed that motherfucker without having to slam him.
Like, yeah, I meant to do that shit.
I meant to make him slam himself like that. Spike had a fucking, like, his merchandise at this point was something that kind of just perplexed me through the match, because it really seems like it was an instance of a shirt that was designed specifically for a wrestler to wear.
Right.
Because I can't imagine any guy, like, putting on a t-shirt that says pound for pound, one tough little bastard, like, walking the streets.
Well, yeah, I mean,
like, you would...
Well, like, all the Dudleys had, like, their own, like, specialized shirts.
Right, and it just, it never seemed like the Dudley's gear was something you were gonna see anybody but a Dudley wearing.
Right.
Although, oddly enough, anyone you saw wearing Dudley's gear looked like they could have been a Dudley.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the ECW, like, Mutant Freak Show Dudley family, too.
Yeah, like, that's Big Dick Dudley and, like...
Dances with Dudley and Studley Dudley.
Yeah.
Oh, man. If there's one thing that WWE missed out on in the Attitude Era, it was bringing in the whole fucking Dudley clan with Bubba and Devon, at least for a short period.
I have no idea how they didn't do that at some point.
Yeah, at least for a very small time period. Like, that would have been incredible. Yeah. Like, obviously you can't have Big Dick Dudley, but BD Dudley?
Yeah.
Come on. Like, you could have just had all these fucking freaks on for, like, a couple months and had them just be cannon fodder to protect the Dudleys.
Or better yet, I was, like, home for, like, a storyline. What if they try to convert people into the Dudleys?
Oh, that would have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Like somebody goes on a losing streak on Heat.
Yeah, exactly.
And just, like, be a Dudley.
Yeah, exactly. If they hand their own shirt, like, well, fuck, okay.
All right, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll wear the glasses. That's how you know, like, somebody's a Dudley. Like, they put on the glasses and raise their hand at, like, the okay symbol. Oh, man. I would watch that shit, too. Especially if they did it like the fucking Straight Edge Society.
Oh,
and, like,
yeah.
Bubba was administering rights to him to, like, be a Dudley.
No.
At the end of them, like, Devon's only role was just to say, oh, my brother, testify.
Like he has to, like, Devon has to verify as if he's, like, an actual reverend.
Exactly. Devon can confirm their conversion.
Yeah.
Like, you're officially a Dudley now because he's a reverend. Bubba, actually, I think he had real potential as a cult leader because, as you can see, he managed to convince his brother to give up the Lord for the tables.
Yeah.
Like, I know that gimmick wasn't getting over, but I'm so incredibly sad that I didn't get more time with the Reverend Devon on this show.
I mean, it was a cool gimmick.
It was such a cool, bizarre gimmick.
Yeah.
And I think growing up Southern Baptist in Northeast Arkansas in my youth, like, kind of gave me a different sort of appreciation for this kind of character. Because I think if you grow up in that sort of culture, you know these, like, smarmy fucking prick reverends that are just trying to line the fucking collection plates.
Right.
And it's hilarious. Like fucking, if they just would have let him be Bernie Mac from Friday, you would have had a fucking at least solid upper mid-carder.
Oh, for sure.
But no, they had to ruin it because Mark Jindrak sucks.
Yeah.
I blame Mark Jindrak not being in Evolution for the Reverend Devon going away.
That was a fair assumption.
Oh, shit. Speaking of Spike Dudley and his terrible t-shirts, though, he pulls a fast one, forces Rosie to go through a table of his own volition, and, like, this is really when the incredibleness of Rosie kicked in, because he's running full fucking force.
Yeah.
Crashes head first through this table. And then he's just right back up.
Yeah, it's like nothing happened to him.
Nope, I'm fine. Like, they really could have made him into the fucking Rhino from Spider-Man.
Oh.
And it would have, I think it would have worked.
Yeah.
Like, just make, like, if they had actually stayed the course with Rosie and Jamal, holy shit, what potential this tag team
had. Oh, for sure. I think I just love this spot, just because this is like the moment in the match where, like, Rosie would, like, wait a minute. I'm a huge ass Samoan. What am I doing? I'm about to kill some bitches.
Right? Like, Jeff and Spike don't equal me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to murder them. And then he did. Holy shit. Like, as part of this, though, like I said, we mentioned Jeff slamming himself, basically. And then we get this spot where Spike goes through a table, and this is his elimination. And I honestly don't know what to call this move.
I mean, this is brutal. I mean, okay, Spike was trying to go for, I think, the Dudley Dog, you know, his finisher. And
yeah, he was going for a Dudley Dog.
Yeah, and then, the Samoans, walked up behind him and caught him. And, they have him up in, a powerbomb position. And then, instead of, doing, a regular powerbomb, they just, flipped him backwards. So, he just went, crashing, back and neck first. It looked fucking brutal.
Yeah, he just went fucking just chest and face and, I'm pretty sure, parts of his body that should not have made contact with the ground all at the same time did.
Yeah.
It was just brutal. I literally noted it as a double reverse power bomb, with question marks and dots and shit, because I really wasn't sure what to call it.
Yeah, that'd probably be the best description of it. Whatever it was brutal. Spike was dead.
Yeah, Spike was definitely dead.
Yeah.
Then we got another fucking brutal spot when 3 Minute Warning goes for a double top rope spot on the two remaining faces, and the faces get up to counter, and Rosie gets knocked off balance on the top rope, falls crotch first on the turnbuckle, and then does a full backflip and lands on his fucking face.
Yeah.
You don't need to bump that hard, bro. I appreciate it, but that looked brutal.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it's I appreciate the effort, but come on now.
Yeah, I appreciate the effort, but you're going just a little bit over the top here.
Yeah.
Also, a little bit over the top was just fucking Jeff from this point on. He didn't do a whole lot early in the match, after he fucking brutalized himself.
Yeah.
But then he gets... Jeff and Rosie end up fighting in the crowd. While in the ring, Jamal is trying to just fucking mash Bubba Ray Dudley, and ends up getting Rico crushed in the process. Jeff and Bubba end up double-teaming Rosie in the crowd, though, so that Jeff can do an entirely unnecessary swanton spot.
Yeah.
There was enough happening in this match, and there was enough that they managed to do in the ring that was impressive to me, that this spot didn't need to happen.
Right. This was kind of I'm not going to say it was worthless, but this is one of the things where, at the end of the show, I completely forgot it even happened.
Exactly. They only did it for that callback to the Royal Rumble 2000.
Right, yeah.
Where, those of you who haven't seen the match, Jeff, at one point, climbs into the crowd like he does at the Royal Rumble 2000 and does a swanton off of a balcony onto Rosie through a table. And that's Rosie's elimination.
Yeah.
And, you were saying, I had forgotten this spot happened until I hit it in my notes again.
Yeah.
It only served the purpose to pop the crowd, and there was enough happening already that it was easily just lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I noticed, the crowd chant, holy shit, for, a few seconds, and then, immediately died.
Exactly. Well, that's because they'd seen, more extreme stuff from Jeff that year.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeff had done more extreme but safer spots throughout that year that were just so much more memorable than this. I would even put this in, the top 10 fucking Jeff Hardy bumps of all time.
Oh,
but then you go back and watch, then you go back and you watch something like his ladder match with The Undertaker, and that's full of stuff that just looks absolutely fucking brutal that didn't kill his body half as bad as doing this balcony dive.
Right.
God damn it, Jeff, you did it to yourself.
Yeah, this is one of the things where it just comes off just why?
Damn it.
Too much.
Too much, Jeff, too much. And shit like this is really, it highlights why we're going to be done with Jeff in a few months.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty soon his drug abuse is going to get to him. So.
Exactly. And it makes perfect sense because no one can keep up a pace like what this guy was doing at this point in time. Just like Asher and I've talked about it on previous episodes with guys like Edge and at this point Angle and Benoit Like, these guys were just absolutely fucking killing themselves, you know, to try to make sure that they had a solid spot in that upper mid-card to main events status.
Right, yeah.
And Jeff was really a guy that was a victim of that culture at the time because he was doing, like, his whole shtick was high spots. And once, like, once he did all the high spots and he had to get more and more dangerous with it,
right,
that's when his problems started spiraling out of control.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like, I was a huge Jeff Hardy fan right up until about this point, in all honesty. And we've never actually seen him live up to his full potential, at least in my eyes, as a performer, because of basically this era.
I mean, yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm actually a big Jeff Hardy fan. He's actually a big reason why I got into wrestling. But yeah, I mean, Jeff is one of those guys who, as good as he was, he should have been better.
Exactly. Like, he never quite hit that ceiling that where he could have been just the absolute best Jeff. Then we ended up with Willow.
Yeah.
But that's a story for a different time. I still want to do some random TNA reviews, if only for shit like that.
Oh, I kind of do too, dude. That'd be awesome.
If there's interest, we will totally do it. So get on it, guys. Tweet us or Facebook it.
Yeah.
Just let us know what crazy-ass shows you would want to hear reviews of, because we will make that happen.
For sure.
One thing that kind of upset me about this match, they cut out one of my absolute favorite botch spots of all time. And that's the, come on, Jeff, goddammit, spot from Rico.
The what?
The, come on, Jeff, goddammit. The spot where Rico was perched on the top rope and Jeff was supposed to hop up much closer to it than he actually was. He was across the ring when he actually got to the spot. Uh-huh. But like, there's like in the pay-per-view cut, you can see Rico like stand there on the top rope for like 10 to 15 seconds. And like, he's looking around for Jeff and finally he just has enough and screams, come on, Jeff, goddammit. And that's like when Jeff finally is like, oh shit, I've got a spot to do.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that was not on the network version.
It was not, and cocaine is a hell of a drug is the lesson to be learned from that. Once Jeff finally does manage that spot, Bubba ends up back suplexing Rico from the top, but Jamal moves the table out of the way. Fucking looks nasty for Rico.
Yeah.
Jeff is fighting with Jamal on the outside of the ring, and there's this nasty spot where he just throws a fucking table, like, folded legs first, right into Jamal's face.
Yeah.
Like, fuck your face. I hope to disfigure you here.
I mean, like, one of the things I always mark out for in wrestling is when a wrestler just goes, fuck it, and just throws something, like, right in the other wrestler's face.
Exactly. And that's what this spot was. Like, it almost seemed like Jeff was just, like, frustrated enough. It's like, fuck it!
Yeah.
No, nothing else has worked. Let's try this.
Like, holy shit, that actually worked.
If I can't beat you down, I'm going to throw shit at you till you fall over.
Like, that was the whole match. You just kept, like, finding different shit to throw at him.
Oh, man, that describes so much of this era, sadly enough. Jeff blows another spot, though, however, when he tries to run on the barricade. And just, like, you can tell that this guy was blown up at this point anyway. And he tries to run the barricade and just, like, trips and falls off the end. But Jamal continues with the planned spot of throwing the table back at him.
Yeah.
So it really just looks like Jeff falls off the barricade face first through a table.
Yeah, it does. He put himself through the table.
He really did. And it was like, for as horrible, like, it looked awful for Jeff to take. But from a viewer point of view, that shit was hilarious.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome. Like, literally, I have in my notes, LOL.
Yeah, like, holy shit, Jeff fell through a table face first. We get another spot that's just like this really was just the most casual sequence of events in this match. Cause, like, you get the table in the face spot, then you get Jeff falling through the table. And then, like, Jamal just sets him up on a table and climbs back in the fucking ring, looks around for a second, and then just, like, fucking sets record pace going up the corner and right over the top onto Jeff.
Oh,
with just
he killed
one of the most glorious-looking fucking top rope splashes I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's kind of hard not to make it look impressive when you're that big, but...
Yeah, but he did it so quick and so casually.
Yeah.
Like, he just runs up the ropes and, like, turns midair, like RVD style. We get a top rope powerbomb from, well, sorry, I just skipped a fucking line. Anyway, back in the ring, Bubba hits the bionic elbow spot on Rico and tries to eliminate him before Jamal recovers, and he can't fucking do it. He does manage a top rope powerbomb through a table on Jamal, which, god damn it.
Yeah, this was awesome.
Yeah, like, these guys were just going hard
yeah.
the whole fucking match. Like, this set the pace for the show.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every table spot was something like, holy shit, like...
Like, this was a table match done right.
Yeah.
This wasn't a TNA, let's throw out a table match for free on Spike table match sort of deal.
Yeah, I mean, like, if these guys are going through a table, they're going to make it mean something.
Exactly, and it meant a lot in terms of that visual impact for the viewer. But not a lot to the competitors, as Rosie and Jamal just completely fucking no-sold being eliminated.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, we were put through tables? Guess who doesn't give a fuck? The 700-pound of Samoan right here.
And, of course, there's nothing the ref can do because it's no DQ.
No DQ, and who's going to stop them?
Exactly. Well, like Devon, actually.
Right, the commentators always use that cliche, like, who's going to stop these guys? Well, if I'm a referee, I'm not going to try to stop three-minute warning, yeah. All right? Like, those guys could do whatever the fuck they
like,
want.
Fuck that. You guys did not pay me enough for this.
Exactly. Devon apparently does get paid enough for this shit as he comes to save Bubba. They fight off 3-minute warning. Rico gets 3D'd through a table. And that's your finish. 14 minutes, 22 seconds. The Dudleys and Jeff Hardy win with Bubba Ray being the sole survivor for his team.
Yeah.
And that just goes to show that even in 2002, splitting up the Dudleys did not work.
Yeah, I have no idea what they were thinking with that.
Right, like this was an oddly apropos show for us to review right now, though, considering like TNA literally just did a Dudley Boys reunion in New York.
Yep, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, like this just happened 12 years later. Like there was much less Samoan involvement, but it happened.
Yeah.
Speaking of much less Samoan involvement, we go to the world where Stacy Keibler is hanging out. She lets us know that Tess would have been there, but he is on a worldwide PR tour because he loves testicles.
I completely forgot about this. I completely forgotten that Tess called his fans testicles.
You know what? I wish I could have forgotten that Tess called his fans testicles. Like, if there was one thing that would make me not want to be a fan of somebody, it's referring to me as like some version of genitalia.
Yeah.
Like, don't call me a testicle. I'm not going to like you more if you refer to me as, like, a ball.
Yeah.
Like, fucking don't call me your semen pouch. I'm not going to be down with that. Hashtag semen pouch.
Make it trend, kids.
Yeah, make it trend, kids. We had Ric Flair's boner that didn't trend at all. But people still tweet me about this show. And they hashtag it Ric Flair's boner because of an episode we did like 6 months ago.
Awesome.
Right? The kids love that floppy old man dick. That's one thing I learned on this show. Apparently everyone does.
Yeah.
Because Ric Flair has all of the ex-wives.
Yeah.
Just all of them. So Stacy is, she's here to introduce us to Saliva, who's doing a song that, I'm pretty sure it's called Always.
Yeah.
Because they say it like 8,000 times.
And we're not sure on this. Maybe somebody can confirm it for us. But
yeah, if we're wrong at all, go ahead and let us know.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty certain it was Always. But they actually did a couple of pretty awesome highlight packages during this song. Like, they were cutting between the band performing live and video packages for all of the title matches this evening. And awesome production on the video.
Oh, yeah,
but,
great job, yeah.
But, man, I hated this fucking song.
I mean, honestly, like I said, I kind of marked out for it, because for me it was kind of a throwback, you know, kind of like a little, you know.
Like, I had that moment of nostalgia where I'm like, oh, I remember this, like, I remember this song specifically, like, getting me hyped for Survivor Series. It's like, man, what a fucking awful song. Like, I can't wait till we get to the point where I became an internet fan and was able to download all of the awesome new metal that WWE gave us as theme songs. And we can reminisce about the time that I downloaded an entire Cold album through WinMX because WWE used one song for the theme for Backlash, and I kind of dug it.
Okay, so I'm glad I'm not the only one that does that, because I used to... There was a time when my MP3 was, like, just solely, like, WWE songs.
Oh, yeah, dude. Like, that's... Like, when I was younger, before I was really able to, like, develop my own taste in music,
right.
Like, that's basically how, like, a lot of my shit went. Like, if I heard a song somewhere, like, that's, like, how I got into it. And because I heard most of music through WWE, it's like, oh, I like a lot of this. I've got a lot of music that they used, and looking back on it, it was terrible. Like, I bought an Evanescence album because WWE... used one of their songs, and I kind of dug it.
Yeah, I remember Evanescence.
Exactly. Them. That band.
Yeah.
The one thing I remember about Evanescence is that they were from Little Rock, and their lead singer was kind of hot.
She was kind of hot.
Isn't
CM Punk friends with her?
Probably. CM Punk's friends with, like, everybody, apparently.
Yeah.
And he's a Walking Dead enthusiast.
That's all he's known for.
Exactly. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Like, my brother's moving to Chicago, and like in a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
And I told him that, like, if at any point he's like walking the streets and he runs into CM Punk, like, he can't like approach him and be like, "Oh, you're CM Punk." He has to approach him and be like, "Dude, hey, you're Walking Dead enthusiast Phil Brooks, right?" Like, that's how he has to approach him. He's got completely clueless about the fact that he's a former pro wrestler. I'm just like, dude, you'll make his fucking day if you do that. Just do it.
Or like, Barry, go up to him like, "Hey, wait a minute, aren't you AJ Lee's husband?"
Yeah, aren't you that guy that's married to that fucking Divas champion?
Yeah.
What do you do? I don't do anything, man. Right on. Living the dream. Just imagine, like, I bet Punk's mind would be fucking blown. Like, I bet he would be expecting, like, "God damn it, not this shit again."
Yeah.
Like, a fan coming up on it. He's like, "Hey, you're Walking Dead enthusiast Phil Brooks."
"Why, yes, I am."
"Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am. Would you like to talk about The Walking Dead?" "No, just wanted to say hi."
Just
fucking runs off. "Just a fan. I appreciate your enthusiasm." "I'm a Walking Dead enthusiast. Oh, man. That went fucking off the rails in a hurry.
Yes, it did.
And speaking of off the rails, we've got a Cruiserweight title match. And things always just get kind of kooky, at least commentary-wise, when Jamie Noble and Nydia show up.
Okay, well, I'm going to be honest. I kind of tuned out the commentary by this point, just because I'm so used to it with how terrible the commentary is nowadays. I kind of just trained myself how to do that.
Well, you didn't miss a whole lot, to be honest. Like, honestly, one of the bigger weak points of this show was the commentary.
Yeah.
And it's not because it was, like, particularly bad. It was just because it was, like, it was there.
Right.
Like, there weren't any really great calls on a show that I think honestly deserved a few.
Yeah. I mean, like, even, like, the big, like, the main event, again, spoiler alert, even with, like, the big, you know, ending to the chamber, there really was no big, like, call from even JR.
Right, like, JR yelled a lot, but he didn't really make a big call.
Yeah.
It's like, "Shawn Michaels has done it!
Yeah.
I need new pants!" That's it.
Yeah.
Like, good night, everybody, because, like, Shawn Michaels wanted that the show just ended immediately.
Yeah. Like, fucking, like, Shawn Michaels' second match back, wins the fucking title, go off the air after, like, a minute.
Right, there's confetti, he's standing there covered in blood and confetti. And we're done. Good night, everybody. Enjoy,
you know,
that visual.
Like, somebody this season, like, "Well, enough of this shit." Turns it off.
Right? Like, Kevin Dunn's like, "Pull the plug."
Yeah.
"Pull the goddamn plug. We've only got 15 minutes left on pay-per-view. We can't stand around with this bullshit. We gotta get to the fucking... We gotta get to the previews for the next month's show."
Yeah.
Goddamn you, Kevin Dunn. You ruin everything.
No, wait. We need another saliva video.
Yeah, we need to put in another saliva highlight package.
Yeah.
They've got another song that we can promote, right? Come on. One thing I do have to note, and it goes back to a complaint that I made several months ago, and it's not really something I've referenced on recent shows, but Taz went from having really awful, like, poorly cut fucking suits to tonight, his suit was just perfectly cut and very snazzy for the time. So, shout out to Taz's tailor for that one.
Yeah,
that
was looking good. He's looking good.
Yeah. Yeah, not for nothing, but that suit was on point.
That suit was a rocket buster.
A real rocket buster. We got a sign in the crowd before this match that said, Nydia is my cousin's sister. Oh, man. I love a good incest joke, you guys. Incest is just, it's fun for the whole family. And my first big question about this match, though, is why is the champ coming out first?
I have no idea what's up with that.
Like, that was a weird theme throughout the night. Like, we got a lot of the champ coming out first. And that's always been a big pet peeve of mine.
I mean, at the end of the day, it means nothing. But at the same time, it's like, this isn't right.
Exactly. Like, tradition.
Yeah.
Like, come on, guys. Get it together. It almost telegraphs it, too, because in the matches where the champ comes out first on this card, the champ also loses.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, another spoiler, when every single match had title change.
Yeah, like, all of them.
Yeah.
And in almost all of them, the champ came out first.
Yeah.
How about that for telegraphing, goddammit? Kidman has his rap theme at this point.
I noticed that, yeah.
Which I've been waiting on that theme. Because, man, that one is a classic.
It's a great one.
I love that theme. Like, I really wonder, like, when Kidman shows up at the NXT Center, like, I wonder if he makes them play that theme when he comes through the doors. Because I totally fucking would if I were him. Kidman, who looks like Adam Sandler now, and we've addressed that on the show in the past. Like, if they ever make a movie about Billy Kidman's life, Adam Sandler will play him.
I don't know. When's the last time he was on TV?
Oh, it's been at least a decade.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Like, I've seen photos of him, like, you know, incidentally, like, in backstage shots and stuff.
Right, right. Because I know, like, John Cena referenced him in a promo, like, years ago. But other than that...
Yeah. Other than that...
Yeah, haven't heard too much from Kidman.
The Man-Man, as he would be at this point, I believe. Because when you're in your 40s, you can't go by Kid anymore.
Yeah. Well, Kid Cash does.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure he hits women, so... Yeah. Do we really want to trust his judgment?
Yeah, that's true.
That'd be like getting advice from Chris Brown.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he can dance, but do we really want those moves? Domestic assault. Fucking dance moves.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Imagine, like, Darren's dance grooves, but, like, Chris Brown. Like, after his career finally shits the bed, and he's like, oh, well, I guess I'm just going to go make dance instruction videos. It'll be like Chris Brown's domestic disturbance dance video.
Awesome.
Be like, these moves are so good, you'll be able to get away with crimes and shit.
He's probably going to do it, too.
Oh, I don't doubt it. That man has no shame.
Yeah. He does not, just no remorse whatsoever.
None at all. You can see it in his face, because he looks like Cisco now.
Yeah. Oh, actually, oh, man. I can't talk shit, because I did look like Cisco at one point. So, I have to...
Yeah, that's... That's true, but you've also never hit a woman or stormed out of the Today Show.
That's true.
Man, we could do an entire episode just talking about goofy shit Chris Brown has done. But that's not why we're here, unfortunately.
We're here to talk about wrestling, guys.
We are. Kidman tries roll-up attempts early on, but only manages near falls. Noble gets control after a visit to the outside, but Kidman's just like, eat a dick, no, and takes control just immediately back from him.
Yeah.
Like, Kidman may have been the most dominant babyface on this show.
He may have been, yeah.
Like, I say that with honestly no hint of hyperbole. Like, Kidman basically beat Noble's ass through a lot of this match.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, and again, if you're going to make a new champion, you might as well have him look good.
Exactly. Like, nobody wants to see a new champion win by the skin of their teeth.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, you know, if there's... Yeah, yeah, he looked good. Kidman looked good. He looked dominant.
Kidman definitely looked good, but Noble looked excellent in losing. Like, we got some great spots in this. Like, he hits a fucking awesome neckbreaker spot early on.
Yeah.
Goes for a diving crossbody, which Kidman counters with a dropkick that looks absolutely fucking brutal.
Yeah.
It's around this point that the commentators note that there's a huge blood spot on the mat because Rico got gashed pretty fucking severely after that 3D.
Oh, okay. You know, I saw the blood by one paintist in the commentary, so I know why it was there.
Yeah, that 3D spot went horribly bad for Rico. I think he ended up having to get stitches after that.
Jesus.
Yeah, not fucking pretty. We had a fireman's carry neckbreaker from Kidman that looked absolutely fucking brutal.
Yeah, like, this is like a reverse, like, GTS kind of.
Yeah, that's actually how I described it in my notes. Like, Kidman hit pretty much a reverse go to sleep, and that only amounted to a fucking near fall.
Yeah.
Which
is one of the things, like, I get it, because, you know, but still, that move should have been, that would be a good finish.
Yeah, like, this was almost like ROH circa 2007 levels of, like, let's hit an impact move and then not have it be the actual
finish.
Oh, yeah,
just, like, all these cool-looking moves, just use, like, transitions. I'm like, what are you guys doing? No.
Right, like, at one point, Noble hits a fucking awesome-looking Falcon Arrow.
Yeah.
That does not do the deal.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, the deal is not done with that Falcon Arrow. Like,
yes, okay. So,
yeah.
So those of you who don't get the joke right now, I was talking to Hawk, and basically, I explained that I always remember this move, because I was watching a PWG show once, and, like, one of the guys hit the Falcon Arrow, and I think it was Excalibur that screamed, "Falcon Arrow, he's done the deal!"
And unfortunately for Jamie Noble, that was not the case tonight.
It was not.
And honestly, the Falcon Arrow, like, to me, like, that on it, like, that kind of seems like a move that should end it.
Yeah, it really should be. Yeah.
And it, maybe it's because I was, like, because, like I mentioned earlier, I grew up becoming a fan very much in that WWF versus WCW era. Where, you know, I got to see guys like Takamichi Inoku, where his finisher was basically a Falcon Arrow. And so for me, like, that move has credibility as a finisher ingrained in me. And so to see it used as a transition, it's like, get your shit together, guys. Like, tell a fucking story here.
Yeah.
We get very fucking nice looking dive from Kidman off the top onto Noble on the outside. Which he follows up with a slingshot leg drop to get back in. Kidman reverses a Tiger Bomb attempt, gets slapped by Nydia, he then shoves Noble into Nydia and hits, like, it was the sloppiest looking BK bomb I think I've seen in my entire life, but it definitely counts.
Yeah.
Like, I was at a loss at what to call it, and I had to rewind it a little bit. Like, I had to review the tapes, but he was definitely attempting something there. We get another Tiger Bomb counter into a backslide into a fucking Tiger Bomb.
This was awesome.
That was one of my favorite sequences on the entire show.
That was awesome.
Yeah, like, Jamie Noble goes for a Tiger Bomb. Kidman torques it around into a backslide, which Noble just rolls through and muscles him up for the Tiger Bomb, which leads once again to a near fall.
Yeah, that annoyed me.
Yeah, then we get another fucking goddamn near fall spot with a face buster off the top.
Like, dude, the fans totally bought this to finish.
They really did. And then Noble hits an elevated top rope DDT.
Oh, this looked just disgusting. Like,
yeah, like, he spikes Kidman right on the top of his head.
Yeah, but once again, not the finish.
Once again, near fall.
Yeah.
Kidman attempts for a shooting star press, but Jamie Noble leaps to the top rope. Kidman fights him off and just hits a fucking ugly star press.
And what made me mad, and for once I actually paid attention to the commentary, but, like, Michael Cole says something like, he called Kidman's, like, shooting star press the prettiest high-flying move in WWE today. I'm like, what a fucking liar.
Right? Like, there was prettier moves from the Fat Samoans in the first match, Cole.
Yeah.
Like, I realize you're trying to put over your cruiserweights, but Kidman was at a real risk of, like, bouncing off the ropes with this one.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he almost, like literally just crossed himself on the ropes.
It was, despite the finish, though, it was a very good match.
Yeah.
Kidman wins the Cruiserweight title, 7 minutes, 29 seconds. And then, like, he runs through the crowd, like, to the random-ass stage to celebrate. Like, Kidman's just like, somebody's got to make this stage work.
Yeah.
Fuck it. That's why he works fucking backstage now, because Vince saw that he has a real eye for production.
Yeah, like, he knows the little things.
Right? Like, that Kidman wasn't going to let that stage go to waste. Give him a goddamn job for life.
Backstage, we get Angle and Benoit. Angle's watching a monitor. And he says, basically, if Billy freaking Kidman can win the tag can win a title tonight, then so can they.
Yeah.
He calls himself the captain of the team. Benoit disagrees. They agree that they both need to cooperate if they're going to win. Benoit offers out a handshake, but Kurt Angle says no, because they're friends, and friends hug. And Benoit just looks like... I had to reword my notes because it made me feel like too much of an asshole to put it that way. But the look on Benoit's face during this hug was like he wanted to fucking murder Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Like, he was done with Angle's shit. And honestly, from the looks of the highlight video, Angle's been just hugging Benoit against his will for weeks. So I can understand his frustration here.
Yeah. But yeah, this was basically just goofy Kurt Angle ass finest.
Yeah, which I will always be on board with, especially since we're actually about to get to my personal favorite serious Kurt Angle run, which is going to be with Paul Heyman and Team Angle here in the next few months.
Yeah, that should be good.
Right? Imagine that. You came on board just in time for Shelton Benjamin's debut.
Awesome. Nice.
Right? It's like we planned it that way.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving us that opening, Asher. You're a real quality friend.
Thank you for letting me take your spot.
For giving his blessing and whatnot. So we get a backstage segment with Victoria where she's talking to her mirror, which apparently thinks Trish Stratus is prettier than her.
Yeah.
Victoria destroys her mirror, and then a Trish cut out, and she's, I guess, happier after all of this. And we see all this presented on what they were billing as F-View. Super clever, you guys. Awesome job with that writing. Like, this is something that has been brought up on this show in the past, and I've actually seen brought up other places. But this was very much one of the last remnants of WWE trying to be attitude in what was very much a different era.
Right, yeah.
And that's mostly what you're going to see coming from Raw. And I think it mostly had to do with Eric Bischoff and Vince McMahon's joint influence on the product there.
Very possible.
But, yeah, just stuff like this is just... It seems so just unnecessary.
I mean, I liked it, but this is one of those things where, like, yeah, it really didn't need to be on the show.
Yeah, like... I liked it, and for as much complaint as people have for the whole invisible cameraman shtick, as it's called, and all that sort of thing, like, the whole F-View presentation just bugged me because it was so juvenile. They're just like, oh, look at this joke, we're saying F-U, ha 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 ha. Like, shut up, Vince, you're fucking drunk.
Yeah.
So this leads into... Trish Stratus versus Victoria for the women's title. We get a video package where we find out that they're basically just continuing along the storyline path of Trish is a slut and Victoria is both jealous and crazy.
I mean, just based on a video recap, this was like a fucking blood feud.
Oh, yeah, this feud was nuts at the time.
Yeah.
Like, basically every week these two were beating the shit out of each other.
I mean, I saw, like, during the video recap, at one point, like, Trish, like, hit Victoria with, like, a chair that was, like, upside down, or maybe it was, like, Victoria. Like...
Oh, yeah. These two did not give a fuck. That's why we got a hardcore match, actually. Like, this was, in all honesty, I think I can point to this as being one of the last WWE women's feuds that actually felt like something organic. Like, it was very much competition-based.
Right, yeah, they were still treated as actual competitors.
Exactly, like it wasn't, oh, like, you know, you're fucking so-and-so,
yeah, or like,
and I hate you for that.
Or like, you're a big ass.
Exactly, like this feud was, oh, I feel like you stole my chance to be in the WWE sooner, and you're now in the spot where I feel like I would be, so I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, very simple story.
Very simple story, and it works, too, because these two were... Just being, like, they were killing each other weekly.
Oh, yeah, they were bringing the hate.
Yeah, and this match is just another fucking example We get a generic theme for Victoria when she comes out, which I was bothered by initially, but then Jerry Lawler pointed out, you know, that originally he thought Victoria wanted to be like Trish, but now he thinks that she wants to be Trish, which is impossible. It sure is, Jerry. It sure is.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting us know that.
Like I got what you meant, King, but could have phrased it a little bit better.
Right? There's got to be a better way to say that.
Yeah.
He does point out, though, that this is the first hardcore match we've seen from women in a long while. Jim Ross pinpoints it to September 99. And I, for the life of me, cannot remember. And instead of doing additional research for this episode, I took a nap.
I think he said Sable was in it, I think.
Well, no, if it were 99, if it were September, then Sable would have been gone.
Oh, shit, well, I had no idea.
Yeah, because she was gone by over the edge of that year. Like, that's why Deborah was the champion at that point.
Oh, okay.
Like, they just had to get it off of Sable.
Right.
Let me look this up, though, because it's bothering me. Hardcore WWF Women's Championship matches. I'm probably going to get some weird porn here, you guys. This is fucking riveting programming we've got here. Oh, yeah. Lita and Jacqueline.
Lita and Jacqueline?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Damn, that sounds like a really good match,
actually. That does sound good.
Like, I want to see this now, but we'll deal with what we've got on hand here. Like I said, first hardcore women's title match since September 99, and they start going for the weapons early on. Victoria basically immediately starts trying to attack Trish with a broom. Trish avoids it, but ends up getting choked.
Yeah.
Victoria gets on the top rope while choking Trish and ends up getting kicked in the face, which, Jesus Christ, Trish was... I don't want to say that she was one of the more creative when it came to offense, but I definitely think that she wrestled a style that not a lot of women in the WWF until that point had.
Yeah, she did a lot cool.
Yeah, like, she was very, like, she wasn't the female RVD, but she did have some moves that were reminiscent of his style.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't seeing a lot of, you know, women doing standing kicks directly over their fucking head.
Right, yeah.
To nail somebody, and then... So, post this kick in the face, she grabs a trash can lid, and before she can make any real use of it, she just gets fucking walloped with a broom.
Yeah.
They end up outside where Victoria sends Trish face first into a trash can filled with weapons. And now Victoria, once she puts Trish back in the ring, it's her chance to hit a slingshot leg drop. And brings in another fucking trash can. Like, there's just all these goddamn trash cans everywhere.
Oh, yeah,
guys.
They're like stable to the ring post.
Yeah, there's one on each ring post, and they're all filled with weapons. And then Victoria brings in, like, two independently of those.
Yeah.
She puts it in the corner in between two ropes, ends up taking a catapult face first into it, though, and busts her nose. She starts bleeding. Does not look fucking pleasant by any means.
Yeah.
Trish brings in the ironing board, though, because, well, sexism has to come from somewhere in a match like this.
Of course.
Jerry Lawler starts running his mouth about how Trish is the perfect woman if she can fight and iron. Okay.
Like, way to be subtle there, King.
Right, if she's attractive, if she can fight and she can iron, then she's just perfect. Way to go, you sexist. Thank you for that. Trish kicks Victoria in the armpits before she gets Irish whipped into the ironing board. And then Victoria just fucking beats the shit out of Trish with a cane.
Yeah.
I mean, just beats the shit out of her. Trish attempts a stratosphere on the top rope, but Victoria almost counters it, only for Trish to pull herself up and use a trash can lid to the face. Like, that's pretty much the top spot of this match.
Oh, yeah, very cool looking spot.
Yeah, but like, that was the go-to spot for this match. Like, we need to do something. All right, I'm going to hit you in the face with a trash can lid.
Although, yeah, I will say I didn't like that. Just because it looked so obvious. Like, Trish was, like, looking for, like, the trash can lid. Like, Victoria had to just sit there and just wait for it.
Right. Like, oh, I wonder what she's doing. Yeah. She's suddenly getting much heavier. So, Victoria ends up crashing to the outside off of this spot. Gets sent back first into the stairs. Once they're back in the ring, though, Victoria scores with a huge fucking powerbomb, which is not something you see from female workers too often.
Oh.
So it was that much more impressive to see, you know, Victoria bust it out. It was almost a transition move here. She then gets out of the ring and busts out a double-sided mirror, which plays absolutely no role in this match.
Yeah, I hated that. I hate when, like, matches do that. When they bring something in that's been, like, a big part of the storyline this entire way, don't even use it from the finish.
Well, the thing that happened is the mirror broke.
Really?
Yeah, they did not touch it once. Like, Victoria brought it in and placed it in the corner, like, flat. And then when they showed it again, like, incidentally later with the camera, it was broken. Like, at some point, it had just fucking shattered. And so I guess they called an audible and did not use it.
Okay, well, that would make a lot of sense because the finish of this was pretty anticlimactic, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. Trish hits a chick kick for a near fall. Tries to use a baking pan, but takes a Singapore cane to the ass. Botches a bulldog for a near fall. Victoria busts out the fire extinguisher, sprays Trish with it, then, like, there's a snap suplex and it's over.
Yeah. New champion.
New champion, Victoria, 7 minutes, 1 second. Like, there was no build to that finish. It's like, here's the fire extinguisher spot. Okay, now it's over.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I keep expecting, like, Trish to kick out of the suplex and, like, 1, 2, 3. Wait, what?
Right? Like, it almost felt like the referee fucked up.
Yeah.
But no, apparently a snap suplex will end a match in this day and age.
I guess so.
So we go backstage to the coach and Bischoff. Coach wants to know what to expect later with the Elimination Chamber. Bischoff basically says history and the future. And then Big Show walks out like, hey, remember when I was on Raw and you didn't book me and now tonight I'm in a WWE title match? You can go fuck yourself. And then just, like, walks off.
It was awesome.
Right? It was a wonderful callback to a segment from a few months ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, like, WWE doesn't, like, pay attention to continuity very often, but this is one of those things, like, what they actually did, and it was awesome.
Exactly. Like just the mere fact that a few months before on Raw, they were doing an angle where the Big Show felt underappreciated. And they used that as his motivation in this Brock Lesnar feud. Like, as if that wasn't awesome enough for continuity. They actually went that extra step and had that confrontation, which is not something you're going to see anymore.
Oh, yeah, no way.
We go from that segment to Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. Heyman's still nervous. He's like, dude, you're hurt. And Big Show's been effective for this 3-month booking cycle. I don't want you to lose your title. And Lesnar's like, I got this, dude. And Heyman's like, all right, well, I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that my client leaves with the title.
Wink, wink.
Which, bum, 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 foreshadowing. 12 years later, and he's still using that same terminology.
Yeah, I noticed that. Which,
it's like,
I guess if it works, keep using it, I guess.
Exactly. Heyman knows what's over.
Yeah.
I'm just sad that he doesn't carry a cell phone anymore.
Oh, no, that'd be awesome.
Like, that would still work, Paul. It would still work. We get a video package for the WWE title match. In the last few weeks, Big Show has fucking murdered Rikishi, Undertaker, and Rey Mysterio. And he's beat the hell out of Lesnar several times. And you could kind of see, like, especially in this video package, that Brock Lesnar face turn was coming regardless of what happened here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The fans were ready to cheer for Lesnar.
Not only were the fans ready to cheer for him, like, he was the face in this angle.
Yeah.
Like, when he finally got that moment of retribution against the Big Show right before this pay-per-view, like, the roof blew off the fucking arena. Because Lesnar was just, like, he's got so much physical charisma.
Right.
That it's hard to be against him, especially when he's put in that rare underdog role.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where, like, you watch Lesnar, and you think about how ridiculous it is that he'd only been wrestling for, like, 3 years at this point.
Right, and he'd only been in a main event role for, like, 3 months.
Yes. Yeah.
And he was already just so massively over.
Yeah.
Like, just the way this guy, like Brock Lesnar, I always kind of felt like his missing years there were a really big missed opportunity. Because even if, like, even if professional wrestling wasn't his passion, he was always a guy that got it.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, he always knew exactly what was needed for whatever situation. And it still continues to this day.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, if you go... I mean, go back and watch all of his recent matches. He gets it.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, though?
I was going to say, like, you know, people always say, well, Lesnar doesn't care about wrestling. Well, for a guy who doesn't care about wrestling, he puts a hell of a lot of effort into it. He actually doesn't.
Definitely. Like, I don't understand how people could say that Lesnar doesn't care about wrestling when literally, like, wrestling's one of the more dangerous things he could be doing with his life right now.
Yeah.
He certainly doesn't have to be doing it, and he still chooses to. And every time he comes back, it's some just fucking balls-out hellacious match like it was with Punk at SummerSlam last year.
Yeah. I mean, like, when he goes in, when, like, he wrestles, he goes hard. He does not hold anything back.
Definitely. He's just so fucking impressive, always. Like, Lesnar has always impressed me, though. And this match, in spite of it being so fucking short, is no exception.
Yeah, like, this was good. I'm like, for what it was good.
Exactly. Like, Lesnar, first of all, blew the fucking roof off of Madison Square Garden when he came out. We got just like we were mentioning, this match is really slow. But a lot happens.
Yeah.
Like, from the very early goings, like, they slow it down early with just tying up. But then they set a pace where, like, Big Show starts manhandling Lesnar right out of the gate. And Lesnar just, like, it takes under a minute for him to say, well, enough of this shit. And just with one of the fucking most beautiful double leg takedowns I think I've ever seen, just fucking floors Big Show and starts pummeling him. They brawl to the outside. Show drives Big Show back. I mean, Show drives Lesnar back first into the post. And then we get a goddamn back suplex from Lesnar to Show on the inside.
Yeah.
Lesnar is just hitting him with shoulder blocks in the corner repeatedly. And Show tries to crush him in the corner, but ends up taking a German suplex.
Yeah, I mean, there was a point in this match where Lesnar just said, fuck it, and just started killing Show like suplexes.
Right, and, like, consider the fact that this was Show when he was at just about his absolute fucking biggest. Holy shit. And, like, we'll talk about it, we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to, the Royal Rumble 2003 here in a couple of weeks. But the Big Show has mentioned before that, like, working with Lesnar wasn't exactly his favorite thing in the world. Because Lesnar was a guy that could throw him around like that.
Right.
And with the Big Show being just as fucking big and bulky as he is naturally, like, it's impossible for him to bump like that much.
Right, yeah.
And at, like you said, at one point in this match, Lesnar just said, fuck it, and started throwing him. He scores with a massive German. He tries for an F5, but misses. Oh, well, but Big Show slips out. The ref takes a bump, Heyman slips a chair into the ring, Lesnar just beats the fuck out of Show right in the head with a chair.
Yeah, just kills before, him.
Yeah, like, it's four or five just nasty, unprotected shots before an F5. There's a new ref that he counts to two before Heyman pulls him out, that son of a bitch. Lesnar gets a look on his face like he is gonna fucking murder Paul Heyman, and in all honesty, had he caught him, I think that Lesnar probably would have, like, just all kayfabe be damned. He would have accidentally murdered Paul Heyman.
I mean, he may have actually just eaten Paul Heyman right there.
Just eating him right there in the middle of Madison Square.
Yeah.
Lesnar runs into a chair shot while chasing Paul Heyman. First one to the ribs and then to the back. He takes a choke slam on the chair. Paul Heyman revives Mike Chioda to count the three. And 4 minutes, 19 seconds, new WWE champion. Heyman and Lesnar celebrate, and then they get the fuck out of there. I mean, Heyman and Big Show celebrate, and then they get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, they, like, go out to, like, a limo that's just conveniently waiting for them.
Right. Well, because when you're going to screw over a guy like Brock Lesnar, you got to get the fuck out of there as quickly as you can. Like, I wouldn't wait around for him to come, too.
True.
We get an on-screen with the SmackDown commentators where a guy that looks like a mid-90s Ben Stiller character keeps talking to the camera about Booker T. Like, I literally got nothing of what they said because that guy was so distracting.
I don't even have this in my notes, so...
Yeah, well, you didn't miss much here. Like I said, mid-90s Ben Stiller. I'll have to screen cap this guy and put him on the Facebook or the Twitter or something so that you guys can know what I'm talking about. Also, we get a video for the Triple Threat Elimination Tag Team title match. And I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm not going to do a fucking full rundown of this match. I'm just not going to do it.
There was too much going on, guys.
There was way too much going on, and I literally did not get enough notes for it. And if I went through, like, everything I had, it would take me about as long as it would take you to watch this match.
Yeah.
So, we're going to talk about how, in the lead up to this, they had just fucking Angle and Benoit were, like, beating the shit out of each other weekly. Like, what a weird way to build your tag team.
Yeah, especially, like, the very first tag team champion.
Exactly, like, they won the titles, they won a trophy, which they ended up having to have a match over, because they fought over it, knocked Stephanie over, she slapped the shit out of both of them.
Yeah.
They had a match, the Guerreros interfered without Benoit knowing for him to win. Angle got all heated and busted the trophy up. These two just, like I said, they fought for fucking weeks. There was an amazing match on SmackDown that was Edge and Mysterio versus Angle and Benoit, 2 out of 3 falls for the tag team titles. And that's where Edge and Mysterio won the tag team titles, so they are defending here in this match. But one thing that stuck out to me about this video is that when Stephanie announced this match, she was wearing a red fur coat.
Yeah.
I want to know what the fuck you got to skin to get a red fur coat.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I guess that must be the special McMahon fur, I guess.
Right? Like, Stephanie was stalking down some fucking Dr. Seuss characters.
Yeah.
To get this coat. Before we get into this match, Al Wilson and Dawn Marie are shown in the crowd, and we get the news that they are recently engaged.
Woo!
So, yeah, so we're 1 month closer to Al Wilson getting fucked to death on this show.
Awesome.
Something we've been building to for months here. We also get a shot of some hippie in the crowd with a sweet no-holds-barred shirt that, he had a sign that said, Eddie stole my bike. Dude, you live in New York. There's a whole lot of suspects for who stole your bike. And I'm guessing Eddie's right at the bottom of that
yeah,
list.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Eddie would have more important things to do.
Right? Get out of here, fucking Julius Peterson. You're not wanted. That's what I named that guy, because he looked like a scumbag.
He did look like a scumbag.
Ray popped out of the random stage, as we mentioned here, and he's colored like a tiger tonight.
Yeah.
All black and fucking gold brown striped. I don't know why I noted that, but it was something that felt important here.
I mean, it looked cool. I mean, he looked like a superhero, but...
He did, definitely, which was something that they were really good at doing with Ray at this point.
Yeah.
Although like, they were...
I'll go ahead.
Although they were just really good at making Ray look like a larger-than-life lucha hero.
Right, yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, I was going to note, like, Ray's theme at the time was fucking terrible.
Oh, it was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you face the man of mystery.
Yeah.
Which they ride with WWE.
Like, just the shittiest, like, just PG rap like you ever heard.
Right? It was like, it was a Kidz Bop rap theme song.
Yeah.
With the most baseline, like, I'm pretty sure I've heard Vanilla Ice have more complex rhyme schemes than that.
Yeah.
But, terrible theme song aside, this crowd was fucking hyped to see Ray.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. Which makes sense, because you gotta figure this is probably Rey Mysterio's very first time in competing, you know, at a big show in New York City, because WCW didn't run there.
Yeah.
Like I said, we're not really going to go through this match, like, spot by spot because, well, we really don't have the fucking time for that.
Yeah.
There was so much going on. So really, is there anything, is there any, like, big spots that you want to note as being just completely spectacular in this one?
Well, there was one spot where, like, Benoit had Edge hooked, like, a German suplex. And, like, Eddie, like, went up to the top rope and, like, did, like, I don't know, he flipped over Benoit and, like, got him, like, a sunset flip. So Benoit was still forced, like, German Edge, and that looked just awesome.
Yes, that was spectacular. And actually, it resulted in a double pin. Like,
yeah.
Both Benoit and Edge were pinned, which was Which kind of added a new level to the spot, at least for me, because I dig spots like that.
Yeah.
Like, just absolutely spectacular spot.
Yeah, that looked just great.
There was also a spot that I really liked where Edge went for a spear and ended up in a cross face and ankle lock combo.
This was cool looking, yeah.
And then Ray springboarded in to save Edge by taking out Angle, then just dropkick Benoit right in the back of the fucking head.
Yeah.
Like, it just looked awful. Edge took a fuckload of German suplexes in this one, too.
Oh, man, it was starting to get uncomfortable, honestly. Like, if you know of, like, Edge's, like, neck problems in the future, it gets uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, there's a lot of instances like that, especially around this time period, where you see guys like Eddie and Angle and Benoit and Edge just, like, take ungodly amounts of suplexes in every match.
Yeah.
And then you see, like, the same guys end up with horrible fucking injuries later on in their career. It's like, oh, hey, maybe if you didn't do that so much.
Yeah, maybe you didn't drop a guy on his fucking head 10 times every match.
Exactly. Maybe they would be all right.
Yeah.
Benoit ends up taking a spear to get eliminated. Angle and Benoit are the first eliminations of this match. So they go from being the first holders of the titles to the first gone in the Survivor Series match.
Which,
awesome.
Yeah.
Which, it does make sense, though, because we are going to see both of these guys in a more main event capacity over the next few months with actually Angle being in the WWE title match at the next show.
Yeah, I think they kind of figured this team had kind of run its course by this point, so it's time to get them back in, like, Cena's career.
Exactly, and I thank them for that because literally one of my favorite matches of all time is coming up here in a few weeks at the 2003 Rumble, and it is Benoit versus Angle.
That should be awesome.
But yeah, I have been just waiting to get to that match. But Angle and Benoit are just not taking this shit, though, as they decide to destroy all four of the remaining guys before they leave.
Yeah.
Which, hey, more power to them, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they figure, well, fuck it, if I'm not winning, nobody else is.
Exactly. Fuck all of these people that I'm friends with. The rest of the match really are just it's the Guerreros working over Edge with a lot of quick offense. Ray gets a hot tag and luches the shit out of the Guerreros before Edge hits a double spear. He throws Ray to the top rope for a hurricane run on Eddie. Ray hits a 619, but Chavo prevents a West Coast pop. Edge beats the shit out of Chavo from the outside, which allows Eddie to lock Ray in lasso from El Paso to crown new tag team champions in 19 minutes, 25 seconds. We glossed over a lot of that match, but holy shit, that's because there was a lot of that match.
Yes, that was an awesome match.
If you don't watch the whole one, watch that.
Yes. I mean, I will say about the finish, though. Ray gets hit in the back with the title belt, Edge clearly sees his partner hurt, but instead of trying to help him, goes to the outside to go fight Chavo for some reason.
Fuck Chavo.
Yeah. well, fuck Ray, I'm going to beat the shit out of Chavo, and it cost him the match.
Yeah, beating Chavo's ass is way more important than saving his tag team partner, dude. Like, be honest, if you got the chance, you'd punch Chavo in the mouth, too.
Yeah, I would.
Probably not at the detriment to, like, your career, but Chavo would get hit.
It is just a tag team title.
That's true. They were new belts at the time anyway. They didn't have a whole lot of prestige yet.
Yeah, and they got passed around a lot. Like, this is, like, you know, a month of the title, like, existing. Like, three different teams held them.
Oh, yeah, and it's only going to get worse from here, too, because we're going to see Team Angle win them in the next few weeks of our timeline. There's going to be a lot of changes, just of a lot of titles in the next few weeks. Like, WWE was really at a point where it seemed like outside of their top two titles, they were at a loss of what to do for champions otherwise.
Yeah, it seemed like they were just trying to go with anything and everything at this point.
Well, exactly. They were hoping that if they capitalized on what seemed to be hot, at least on a lower card scale, they would stumble into their next boom period.
Right, yeah.
And it didn't work for them, and that's what's led to their fucking jaded outlook that they've got now, where no new names get pushed. Like, it's the weirdest fucking dynamic that WWE's created, because they were like, oh, well, maybe we'll find our next Austin if we push who the fans want to see pushed. And then they, like, gave them half-assed pushes. And they're like, oh, well, this isn't working. Like, why isn't RVD our number one merchandise seller? Well, maybe it's because you never gave him the fucking World Heavyweight title when he was the most over thing on your show.
Exactly. And it's annoying because they do it all the time. Like, they put the guys in positions where, like, okay, they're kind of being featured, but you know they're not in, like, a good position.
Right. Like, a guy like Cesaro
was
a dude that would have, like, honestly, he would be no better off performing in this era than he is now.
Yeah.
Because they're going back to doing the exact same thing. Like, a few weeks ago, Cesaro was in Money in the Bank for the title. And, like, he somehow didn't magically manage to be the most over human being in that match, packed with main eventers. And so now he's, like, slip-sliding back down the card.
Yep. They fucking took away Paul Heyman from him. Well, Heyman wasn't doing shit for him, but...
Well, yeah, Heyman leaving him might be a sign of a push incoming.
Yeah.
Like, Heyman didn't work. Fucking yeah, I mean, was trying on his own again.
I mean, at the very least now, he might maybe get a feud with Lesnar.
Exactly, which would be probably the best thing for him.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, that's really the only... Like, you need massive rehab for this guy at this point,
yeah,
unfortunately.
Sure.
Because, unlike... The casual fans see a guy get a yo-yo push like that, and they just lose interest.
Yeah. They're like, well, fuck it, this guy's cool.
Exactly. This guy's a fucking, like, this guy's not going anywhere. Why should I give a shit about him?
Exactly.
And then they wonder why they can't get anyone over.
Yeah.
Like, get your shit together. Speaking of fucking failed experiments, Chris Nowinski was out next.
I mentioned I have no memory of anything the dude did.
That's okay, he probably doesn't either. Oh, that was a horrible joke, and I'm sorry, you guys. Nowitzki cuts a promo about how street smarts are not the same as book smarts, and that means New Yorkers are dumb, because Harvard. Yeah. Matt Hardy, version 1, comes out to interrupt, and the Matt facts for tonight are Matt keeps the room temperature to toasty 75 degrees, and Matt only drinks low-fat chocolate milk. JR doesn't care, and neither do I.
I call bullshit on the low-fat chocolate milk one.
I do, too. Looking at his physique, even then, no way, Matt. No way. You're not bullshitting us.
Yeah.
We're not buying into your fucking kayfabe malarkey.
You're mad, dude.
Yeah, you're lying, you fucking asshole. Mattitude is just stupid.
Yeah.
Which, honestly... This whole segment is probably one of the dumbest things.
Yes, this was, like, cheap heat as absolute finest. Or,
right,
or,
like...
Depending on how you are.
Right, like, these guys, they stood around in the ring and they argued about if New Yorkers were stupid or if they were losers. And then fucking Matt Hardy's just like, oh, they're looping. They're losers and they're stupid. And I wish that he would have said looped it, because then I could have gotten away with making a motherfucking Digital Underground reference here. Ooh. But Jeff fucking Matt Hardy used a word that don't mean nothing like loop it. And that led to Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner making his on-screen debut for the WWE. And holy shit, I'm not going to lie, dude. I was a big internet guy at the time, because I had just moved to Wyoming, and when you live in Wyoming and there's 25 people in the town that you live in, you, like, go on the internet a lot.
Right, makes sense.
And so, at 11 years old, I was on the internet, and I remember reading the news about Scott Steiner on WWE.com. And I was so fucking excited for fucking Steiner finally making his debut, you know, after not being there for the whole invasion.
Right.
And then they gave us this Scott Steiner. Holy shit. Like, well, first of all, Chris Nowitzki and Matt Hardy proved that they are also both looped by not running when Steiner makes his entrance, because... If I see this big jacked up lunatic coming at me, I'm getting out of there.
Oh yeah, I'm bailing from the ring. Fuck that.
I'm fucking gone.
Yeah.
Steiner comes in and wrecks both of them. Just tosses them both out of the ring, does some push-ups. In a spot that was cut from the WWE Network version, he demanded they give him the fucking microphone. And he basically just says, "This goes out to all my freaks in New York City. Big Papa pumps your hookup. Holla, if you hear me." And then he leaves.
Well, he just beat ass, says catchphrase, and left.
That's all Scott Steiner needed to do.
I mean, that's probably all he could do at this point, for being honest here.
That is true. He was in an awesome television shape, but not in the best ring shape.
Yeah.
Which I think is the story of Scott Steiner's career at this point.
I'm just wondering, why did they bring him in as, a babyface at first?
Because they needed a babyface foil for Triple H.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they did this whole angle on TV where they teased that he was a free agent and the GMs were doing everything they could to get him to sign with their brand. And then, they did an angle where they implied that Stephanie fucked him to get him to sign with SmackDown. Mm-hmm. And Bischoff was like, "Oh, God damn it, I can't compete with that." And, the next week, Steiner's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm signing with Raw." What a troll.
What a dick.
Right? He's like, "Yeah, I'll sign with SmackDown if I can hit it." And then she lets him hit it. And he's like, "Oh, going to Raw."
I mean, do you really expect anything more from a man who calls himself Freakzilla?
That's true. The big bad booty daddy cannot be tethered down.
Hell no.
He probably hit it and then signed with Raw so that he could avoid awkward workplace interactions. He's just like, "I don't want to have to see her every day."
Yeah.
Let's sign with Bischoff. He's given me the title before. There's 1 hour left in the show at this point, and we're getting into the hype for the World Heavyweight title match, which tells me it's going to be a fucking long last hour to this show.
Yeah.
Terry's chasing Shawn Michaels through the backstage area while we see the Elimination Chamber lowering. She asks him, "Why does HBK believe?" Which is a stupid fucking question. Just, why do you believe? I don't know, Terry.
Why don't you think you're going to lose this match, Sean?
Yeah, why do you think you'll be successful? I don't know, because I'm fucking not an asshole.
Why do you think you're going to win, Sean? You're old, you're beat up.
Right. You haven't wrestled full-time in 4 years. You're old, your back's in terrible shape.
Yeah.
You recently kicked a cocaine addiction. What makes you think you'll possibly beat any of the guys in this match?
Just straight up just buried him, right to his face.
That's probably what happened before, after Randy Orton cut in. Because we did get an RNN news update where Randy Orton just had the most horribly stilted fucking promo in history.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not in history.
I mean, it was a very generic, "Look at me, I'm a cocky heel" promo.
Exactly. You know, and he talked very much like this.
Yeah.
And just had the dreamy, smarmy quality.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Yeah, Orton's never been a great promo guy.
Never. Although I do wonder if GetWellRandy at WWE.com still works. Guys, you should all try to send Randy Orton GetWell emails.
Randy,
and see if they work.
Randy just gets all these random-ass gifts to his house.
Or that email still works, and, Randy has access to it. He just, set it up on his phone. with the vain hope that one day somebody would see one of these videos and think, "I'm going to see if the Get Well Randy email still works."
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Make the Apex Predator's day. Send him some email.
And tell him we sent you.
Yeah, tell him that Hawkeye and Magic sent you. All right, so this is going to be another match where we're not going to recap everything that happened.
Yeah, it's just not worth it. It was a long match, guys.
It was a fucking 45-minute long match, and not only that, it alternated between instances of a lot of things happening and nothing happening.
Yeah.
Honestly, I would be pleased just going through and hitting the high spots yet again, There's a promo beforehand where, a promo video where basically they just tell us these guys have been beating the hell out of each other since No Mercy. Before the match, Triple H is with the coach, and coach is like, you're worried you're going to lose your title and or die tonight? And Triple H is like, I've got a first-class ticket to hell. I just want to know who's coming with me.
This was the corniest shit.
It was very, like, 1980s action hero.
Yeah.
Like, Triple H was trying way too hard to sound menacing, and it did not work for him.
And he's supposed to be a heel. Yeah, he's still trying to be like this, oh, I'm going to kick everybody's ass, badass.
Yeah, the ass kicker's back, and we're going to hell. I don't know. I noted similarities between that fucking promo line and an Eminem song from that year, and it amused me enough. So, that gave him the pass for me right there. It's like, all right, Triple H, you caused me to amuse myself a little bit.
I mean, it was a standard Triple H promo, basically. If you like Triple H promo,
exactly.
You probably like that.
If it was a standard 20-second Triple H promo, yeah. Which we never see anymore, unfortunately.
No, now it has to be 20 minutes now.
Exactly. Bischoff is out to introduce us to the cage.
He goes to town
on this cage.
Yeah. Like, he brought, like, a steel pipe, and he's, like, banging it up against the steel. Like, listen to that steel.
Right, listen to this goddamn cage. It's so noisy.
Like we all thought it was phony at first.
Yeah, we all thought it was a bullshit cage, but you proved us wrong, Bischoff.
Yeah.
You sure showed us.
Yeah, this is the point where it's kind of obvious they're just trying to fill time at this point, just because they didn't have any more matches left.
Right, like, it was a 6-match card, which is kind of bizarre for it being one of the big four. Yeah. But, yeah, very obviously just trying to fill time here. Bischoff explains the rules of the match, which, if you're listening to this show and you don't know the rules of the Elimination Chamber, why are you listening to this show?
Go look it up.
Yeah, just go look it up. Like, I'm not going to sit here and waste time explaining the Elimination Chamber to you. Any spots in particular that stuck out to you here? Like, we started off with RVD and Triple H as the first two guys in. Yeah. Saliva performed yet again on this show, bringing Jericho to the ring.
Yes. Yeah.
But this was, like I said, this match kind of alternated between not a lot happening and a lot happening.
Yeah.
So what really stuck out to you here?
Well, for like the first like few minutes, the crowd was like white hot for RVD. It's like,
oh, definitely.
Like super loud RVD chant.
RVD was the most over guy on the Raw brand at this point, without a doubt. And like that's something that's been just building month after month after month. And this was kind of the apex, well, the precipice of that.
Right. Well, one spot he did, like, a Rolling Thunder, where, like, he started in the ring, but, like, did it to Triple H on the outside. So, like, he...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, RVD imagine, does, like...
Imagine, like, Rolling Thunder, except, like, just RVD starts in the ring, and then he rolls, and manages, like, flip himself outside the ring.
Yeah, It was a really nice looking spot, but goddamn it, it looked like RVD was just killing himself through this whole fucking match.
Yeah.
Like, well, he was trying to kill himself and Triple H in alternate fucking moves.
Yeah. And one
like Triple H.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just about to say, like, Triple H was bleeding in the first fucking 5 minutes of this thing.
Yeah.
Like, and this is a 45-minute match, you guys.
Which, I don't know if he got, did he get busted open hard way?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Because, like, it happened during a spot where RVD was just throwing him repeatedly fucking face first into the wall.
Right, yeah.
We get just a lot of fast-paced sort of stuff from RVD early on. Until he tries to fucking climb a pod, and then Jericho grabs his leg. RVD ends up having to fight off both Triple H and Jericho. And he flips from the top rope to the outside onto Triple H. Like, that's... We get a lot of these kind of spots, and it's kind of worthless to recap all of them.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, it looked like RVD killed himself on this one. Like, it looked like he fucked up his leg.
Yeah, like, that's exactly why I had to mention this one specifically. Like, this was one of the ones where it looked like Van Damme just kind of took himself out.
Yeah.
And it's going to get worse later in the match. Jericho is the third man in. He and Triple H team up on RVD and just beat the piss out of him for about 5 solid minutes until, well, let me rephrase that. They beat the hell out of him, and every few seconds or so, it seems like RVD just kicks Jericho right in the fucking teeth as hard as he can.
Yeah.
Like, RVD has a grudge against Jericho's teeth in this match.
Doesn't he have one against everyone's teeth?
That's true, but specifically Jericho here. I don't understand why neither one of these guys decided to team up and try to eliminate Triple H, especially since he's been such a dickhead to both of them throughout the years.
Well, Jericho and Triple H were heels, so they had to team up, I guess.
Well, that makes sense in 2002 logic, yeah. I suppose. We do get one of my personal favorite Elimination Chamber spots of all time, and that is RVD's Spider-Man spot, where he leaps and just grabs a hold of the wall and then does a twisting back crossbody onto Jericho and just starts fucking beating him in the face. The heels regain control until Booker T comes in and fucking cleans house. Then he hits a spinneroony because everybody else was down, and that's what Booker T does.
Yep, of course.
Yet another instance, though, where I have to question what the hell these guys are doing. Because at least you have the valid point of, oh, well, the heels are working together when it comes to Jericho and Triple H. Well, what the fuck is the deal with RVD and Booker?
Yeah, this was dumb.
Like, they should have been trying to kill these fucking heels that were already mostly dead. Like, why not get these guys out early on?
No, because I noticed it was like, Booker T did the spinner Rudy, and at the same time, RVD was getting up. And, like, as he was getting up, the very first person he saw was Booker T, so he just started fighting him.
Exactly. Like, oh, we're faces, but we're going to beat the shit out of each other. Like, none of the heels thought like that in this match.
Yeah.
And that's why heels always win, you guys.
Of course, they're just smarter.
Exactly. Triple H takes a fucking scissors kick, but Jericho saves him. RVD hits a 5-star frog splash, which nearly fucking literally kills Triple H.
Yeah. Killed Rob, too.
Yeah, killed RVD. It led to a missile dropkick from Booker T., which eliminated RVD, and fucking NYC hated Booker after that.
I laughed so hard when this happened. Cause like,
yeah, it's just...
RVD, he hit this awesome move, crowd's going crazy. He gets up, gets hit with a missile dropkick, gets pinned, immediate boost from the crowd.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's funny, too, because almost this exact thing happened on the fucking December to Dismember pay-per-view in the fucking Elimination Chamber. Like, RVD hit one of his big spots, and then got hit with a minor move. And, like, the crowd was going nuts for him, and then he got eliminated. They're like, oh, well, fuck this.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a long history of WWE fucking up with RVD.
Yeah, this is one, I had to question this. Why was he the first guy out?
Exactly, especially when, like, I don't want to say Booker, you know, is a guy that could have, like, well, like, was deserving of that role.
Mm-hmm.
But based on his role on the card at that point...
Yeah, he should have.
Fucking Booker... Out. Yeah, Booker or Kane both could have feasibly been the first guy out. Or even Jericho.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need Jericho to be, like, the fucking lackey heel through the whole match.
Right.
Because that really was his role. Like, at no point did they make it really seem like Jericho could win.
Yeah, he was
basically... He was just there.
Bitch the whole time, dude.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm here to make sure Triple H doesn't lose the title.
Yeah.
And then Triple H eliminates it. What the fuck? I'm getting ahead of myself on that, though. Jericho tries to eliminate Booker with a lion salt, but takes a fucking brutal-looking spine buster. Kane comes in and just chokeslams fucking everybody.
Yep.
There's a low-blow chokeslam-lion salt combo, which leads to Booker T getting eliminated, but before that, Jericho gets tossed face first through one of the pods.
Oh, yeah. This was...
Which, like, I know, I had to note that everything in this match seemed so new, because you could tell, like, these guys were really learning how to work the chamber as they were going.
Yeah.
And, the production team was definitely learning what they were doing on the fly here.
Right.
And it resulted in some really interesting sort of, production choices that we don't see anymore. But not only that, is I don't think guys really figured out their timing for selling yet on this thing. Because Jericho got put through one of the pods, which now is like a fucking death spot in one of these matches. And like less than 30 seconds later, he's hit the fucking lion's paw. He's like, just kind of like crashed through it a little bit. It's fine. It's like hitting the boards in hockey.
Actually, I remember Jericho like saying in his book that this spot was not planned.
Yeah, that was a... It just sort of happened.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be scary as hell as a performer. Like, you're expecting, like, to take a spot one way. You're like, oh, I'm not landing the way that I was anticipating.
Yeah.
Guess I'll just hope that I don't fucking die.
Yeah, just hope for the best.
Just tuck and roll, Jericho. Tuck and roll.
Just tuck your chin and pray.
Hope for the best. HBK is the next man. Is the next man unleashed into the chamber? And around this time, we hear a guy just yell, "You suck, Sean." This is after like HBK. Like he comes in like a house of fire. Like he puts everybody on the mat. Yeah. He hits that signature HBK forearm spot. And then once again, Kane just starts killing everybody. Everybody takes a choke slam. Instead of pinning people though, like Kane just stands around and looks at them. Yep. Because that makes sense. He attempts a tombstone on Triple H, a guy who not a month before accused him of being a murdering necrophiliac. And, he tries the tombstone. It does not work. He gets pushed into Sweet Chin Music. Which he just fucking no-sells.
Yeah, just sits right back up.
Just sits right up fucking immediately. But just takes a pedigree because fuck new stars. Am I right, Triple H?
Yeah, you gotta get his shit in.
Exactly. Caden takes the Lion's Salt and Jericho pins him for the elimination. We get just fucking, like, the next 20 minutes or so of this match really is like Jericho and Triple H beat the shit out of Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels has a little bit of a comeback, and then they beat the shit out of him some more.
Yeah, it felt like it went for a long time.
Yeah, like, this match easily could have been about 10 minutes shorter.
Oh, for sure.
But we did get a wonderful call from, Jerry Lawler during this match where he said, it's like prison. Like, this is worse than that show Oz. And, first of all, no, it's not, King. Because no one has been stabbed, fucking murdered, or butt-fucked against their will of this cage. And until any of those things happen, it will continue to be a better place to be than Oz. Just saying.
Yeah.
HBK really starts making his comeback later on, though. He gets a near fall on Jericho after hitting a moonsault on a standing Jericho. He locks him in the walls of Jericho, but Triple H saves him with a DDT.
Which this is one of the things I didn't get, because when Triple H want Shawn to eliminate Jericho?
Exactly. Like, a lot of, like, I think this plays into me saying, well, what I said a few minutes ago about they were, really figuring out how to work this cage,
right,
because
yeah.
There were a lot of instances throughout where, like, Triple H was saving guys that are, like, challengers to his title. You know, it's like
right,
they almost,
yeah.
Like, they were seeing people going for pinfalls and submissions and were just instinctively trying to break them up.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it any fucking less confusing, though. And I did have to note that. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you, Triple H?
Yeah, that was dumb. Like, just let them fucking eliminate the dude.
Exactly. Jericho jumps, like, well, because Jericho attempts to pin HBK. But Triple H won't fucking let him, because he wants all the glory for him.
This was dumb, too.
It was. Triple H, at one point, ends up in a Walls of Jericho after a reverse pedigree attempt. He almost gets the ropes, but HBK drags him, Y2J drags him back into the middle of the ring and just eats a fucking Sweet Chin Music from off-screen for an elimination. Which, that was some of the best camera work of the match.
Yeah,
that was
great.
You see Jericho just very quickly, like, drag Triple H halfway across the ring, and then Shawn's foot pops into frame and nails him.
Right. Yeah, awesome.
Very, very nice work there. So, yeah, Y2J is eliminated. We are down to motherfucking 10 minutes of Triple H versus Shawn Michaels for the title, which is a theme we are not going to escape from this show. Or will escape from on this show for a very, 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 very long time. We're going to see so much of these two fucking wrestle.
Yeah, I mean, this was fine, but nothing that you need to go out of your way to see.
Definitely not. It was a whole lot of basically, like, they were trading the same spots for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, they were both attempting pedigrees on the steel, which was leading to catapults into pods and walls. There was a near fall. There was about 8.5 minutes of laying around. HBK fucking took a spacebuster, what resulted in absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Like, he no-sold the shit out of it. He scored with a fucking elbow drop off the top of one of the pods, which just looked absolutely spectacular. Like, for Sean being as out of practice in rings, so to speak, as he was, and being in the physical health he was supposedly in.
Yeah.
That was quite the impressive elbow drop. Is not the end, though. Is not the goddamn end.
No, not the finish. Of course, Triple H has to kick out.
Exactly. Shawn Michaels tries for a sweet chin music, which gets blocked. Triple H hits a pedigree for a slow near fall. There's a backdrop out of a pedigree, which leads to a sweet chin music. 39 minutes, 22 seconds. There's confetti. Jim Ross is coming in his pants. Shawn Michaels is covered in blood. And that's the end of the show.
Yay.
Yeah, really the end of the show, as we said earlier, is like JR screaming while a blood and confetti-covered Shawn Michaels just kind of looks at the crowd.
Yeah. Like, he's not even really celebrating. He's just kind of like, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, like he's standing around and waving. Like, I'm a politician.
Yeah.
Like, I really did feel like Shawn Michaels was going to ask me to vote for him at the end of this. Just because there was all this red, white, and blue confetti.
Yeah. He got a big smile on his face.
A big old Texas grin.
Yeah.
Because he was probably remembering a time he was high on pills in Madison Square Garden. Allegedly. I don't know if I have to say allegedly for that, but
hey,
I will.
It's all but confirmed at this point, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll cover our asses just to be safe. So, your very first pay-per-view on the show, and what do you give this one out of 10?
Out of 10, I would give this one a 9 out of 10. Just because I'm kind of a dick about perfection. But this is about as close to a perfect show as you're going to get, honestly.
I have to agree with that. I gave it a 9 out of 10 as well. It was a spectacular show, but it wasn't perfect. Yeah. Like, it was missing just a few minor things that kept it kind of out of reach of being the perfect wrestling show.
Yeah.
Who would you consider your top performer of the night, though?
I'm actually going to call it a tie. I'm actually going to give it to Trish and Victoria. They fucking killed themselves in that match.
Awesome. Yeah, that match was very, very good. It was we're actually starting to get into a period now where we're going to see a lot more solid women's title matches as opposed to some of what we were seeing before. And it really boils down to they're not really having workers that are as green as Trish was up until here.
Right.
So we're getting into some really solid stuff, and that's actually an excellent way to start off there with Victoria and Trish as your co-MVPs. But I had to give it to Jericho, because he was the fucking workhorse of that main event.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like, if not for Jericho, that match would have been a whole lot more boring than it was.
Oh, for sure. It's him just calling everybody a son of a bitch.
Everyone in that match was a son of a bitch, and he was not afraid to tell them.
Yeah.
Who would you place for your least valuable, though, if you did, in fact, have anyone? Because this show was damn near perfect.
This was a damn near perfect show, but I'm just going to give it to King. Just because, fuck King.
Makes sense. I gave it to Nick Patrick for similar reasons. Nick Patrick for existing. What about your best match of the night?
Best match. I'm probably going to give that one to the tag title match.
I agree with you there. That tag title match, it did have a little bit of pacing issue early on.
Yeah.
But once they found their groove, that match was absolutely nothing but spectacular.
Oh, that was great. Like, seriously, guys, look up that match. It's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely go watch that one. And in a first, I didn't pick a worst match of the night because it seemed to me, and we actually talked about it before the show, it seemed like it would just be nitpicky to pick a worst match of the night.
Yeah, it would be. Like, there really was not a bad match on the show.
Like, even the Big Show Brock Lesnar match, for being as short as it was still very much an enjoyable match, and it did do and accomplish a lot.
Yeah, it accomplished all of its goals. It made Lesnar a huge babyface. Got with him and threw him out of the title. It was good.
Made the Big Show look like just a big fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Which is what you needed. So yeah, I did not... I couldn't pick a worse match by any fucking means. And I have a feeling that's going to change next week. when we get to Armageddon 2002 from the Office Depot Center in Sunrise, Florida. It happened on some date, which I don't know, because I got rid of that fucking thing.
Sometime in December.
It happened sometime in December of 2002, at some point. If I were a little bit swifter at this whole internet thing, I could have it already. December 15th, 2002. Sponsored by Lugs.
Ooh.
Right? The favorite shoe of Funkmaster Flex.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I remember my pair of Lugs. But that's a story for a different time. All right, guys. I think we are going to call it a show here. Is there anything you'd like to plug before we're done?
No, pretty good.
All right. Well, you can check us out on Stitcher, on iTunes, on Botchamania.com, and on the Freakin' Awesome Network. You can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Ruthless Podcast. There's not a lot on the Facebook because I don't like Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook's shit.
Yeah, but like if you guys talk to us on there, like I'm sure we'll talk back. If you tweet me, I will totally respond to that. Yeah, other than that, I think we can call it a show. What did you think of your first experience here on the Ruthless Aggression Podcast?
I picked a hell of a show to start. Great show.
You did. You did, definitely. And it's only going to get better from here.
Yeah.
When next week we do Armageddon. But we're going to leave you guys here. We'll see you next week.
See ya.